జయపుషపాదపంశపరిపాకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శ్రీమాన్ అభయజనానంద భక్తివేదాంత గోస్వామి హరిశీల ప్రభువారికి జయ మిత్రిదాష్ట విశ్వపాద పరమహంస పరిపాకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహర్షిల ప్రభువానికి అనంతవడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ ద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గౌ గోవినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండ గిరి గోవర్ధానానికి బృందావన ధామ్కి నాయపూర్ ధామ్కి మధురపురి ధామ్కి జగన్నాథపురి ధామ్కి ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి గంగమాయికి యమనమాయికి తులసిదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవి గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాణి పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనమహం కరుణానిధే కర్మగ్రాహదహీతాంగం శ్రీమద్భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమేవహి స్వీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ఉత్యర్థం భవ సాదరే మనోరథే మదీయోయం సభరా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోస్తవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వం నో యద ప్రభో నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వపాప ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖ శమనం తం నమామి హరిం వరం జన్మాద్యస్య యదోన్వయాది వరద చాతేష్ విజ్ఞ స్వరాట్ తేనే బ్రహ్మ హృదయ ఆది కవయే ముహ్యంతి యత్ సూరయ తేజో వాయుమదం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృష ధామ్నాస్తేన సదా నిరస్త కుహకం సత్యం వరం ధీమహి ధర్మ ప్రోచిత వైదవోత్ర వరము నర్మత్సరాణం సదా వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివతం తావత్రయోన్మూలనం శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాముని కృతే కిం వా పరైరీశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యమిరుద్య నేత్రకృతి సచిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోత్పత్త్యాదిత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నమః యం ప్రవ్రజంతం అనువేదమవేదకృత్యం సంసారినాం కరుణయా పురాణ గుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనుమయామి గురుం మునీనాం నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తదో జయ మునీరే కమనీయ కిశోర ముగ్ధ మూర్తే కలవేణుకుని దాతృదానందో మమవాసి విజృంభదామురారే మధురీం నమః కణికావిగావిగావి నమః ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రసాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతి భక్తివేదాంత స్వామిని నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవి గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాణి పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి శ్రీమతి గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః వందే నందవ్రజ స్త్రీణాం పాదరేణుమభీష్టశ ವ್ಯಾಸಂಹರಿಕಲೋಕೀತಂ ಪುನಾದಿ ಭುವನತ್ರಯಂ ಗೋಪೀ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಪರಮಾನವೇ ಪೀತಾಂಬರಂ ಕರವಿರಾಜಿತ ಚಕ್ರಶಂಖಂ ಕೌಮೋದಕೀ ಸರಸಿಜಂ ಕರುಣಾಸಮುದ್ರಂ ರಾಧಾಸಹಾರನದಿ ಸುಂದರ ಮಂದಹಾಸಂ ವಾತಾಲೇಶಮನಿಶಂ ಹೃದಿ ಭಾವಯಾಮಿ ಕೋಮಲಂ ಪೂಜಯನ್ ವೇಣುಂ ಶ್ಯಾಮಲೋಯಂ ಕುಮಾರಕ ವೇದವೈದ್ಯಪರಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ವಾಸದಾಂ ಪುರತೋ ಮಮ ಮೂಕಂ ಕರೋತಿ ವಾಚಾಲಂ ಪಂಗಂ ಲಂಘಯದೇ ಯದ್ಭಾತುಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಪರಮಾನಂದ ಮಾಧವಂ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ನಮಃ ಶ್ರೀಮದಿ ರಾಘವಾಯ ನಮಃ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಗೋವಿಂದ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಓಂ ಪಾತಾಯ ಪ್ರತಿಬೋಧಿನಾಂ ಭಗವತಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣೇನ ಸ್ವಯಂ ವ್ಯಾಸೇನ ಗ್ರಥಿತಾಂ ಪುರಾಣ ಮುನಿನಾಂ ಮಧ್ಯೇ ಮಹಾಭಾರತಂ ಅದ್ವೈತಾಮೃತವರ್ಷಿಣೀಂ ಭಗವತೀಂ ಅಷ್ಟಾದಶಾಧ್ಯಾಯಿನೀಂ ಅಂಬತ್ವಾಮನುಸಂಧಾನಾಮಿ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತೇ ಭವದ್ವೇಷಿಣೀಂ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೇ ವ್ಯಾಸವಿಶಾಲಬುದ್ಧೇ ಪುಲ್ಲಾರವಿಂದಾಯತ ಪತ್ರನೇತ್ರಂ ಯೇನ ತ್ವಯಾ ಭಾರತತೈಲಪೂರ್ಣ ಪ್ರಜ್ವಾಲಿತೋ ಜ್ಞಾನಮಯ ಪ್ರದೀಪ ಪ್ರಪನ್ನವಾರಿನಾದಾಯ ತೋತ್ರವೇತ್ರೈ ಗವಾನಯೇ ಜ್ಞಾನಮುದ್ರಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಗೀತಾಂ ದದುಹೇ ಸರ್ವೌಪನಿಷದೋಗಾಮೋ ದೋಧಾಗೋಪಾಲನಂದನ ಪಾಥೋ ವರ್ಷ ಸುಧೀರ್ಭೋಕ್ತಾ ದುಗ್ಧಂ ಗೀತಾಮೃತಂ ಮಹನ್ ವಸುದೇವಸುತಂ ದೇವಂ ಕಂಸಚಾಂಬುರಮರ್ದನಂ ದೇವಗೀ ಪರಮಾನಂದಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಂ ವಂದೇ ಜಯದ್ವಯಂ ಭೀಷ್ಮದ್ರೋಣತಟ ಜಯದ್ರಥಜಲ ಗಾಂಧಾರ ನೀಲೋಲ್ಪಲ ಶರ್ಯಗ್ರಾಹವತಿ ಕೃಪೇಣ ಮಹನಿ ಕರ್ಣೇನ ವೇಲಾಕುಲ ಅಶ್ವಥಾಮಿಕರ್ಣ ಘೋರಮಗರ ದುರ್ಯೋಧನಾವರ್ತಿನಿ ಸೋತೀರ್ಣ ಖಲು ವಾಂಡವೇರಣ ನದಿ ಕೈವರ್ತಕ ಕೇಶವ ಪಾರಾಶರ್ಯವಜ ಸರೋಜಮಲಂ ಗೀತಾಥಗಂಧೋಲ್ಕಟಂ ನಾನಾಖ್ಯಾನಗ ಕೇಸರಂ ಹರಿಕಥಾ ಸಂಬೋಧನಾ ಬೋಧಿತಂ ಲೋಕೈ ಸಜ್ಜನಷಲ್ಪದೈ ರಹರ ಪ್ರೇಮೀಯಮಾನಂ ಮುದ ಭೂಯಾತ್ ಭಾರತ ಮಂಗಜ ಕಲಿಮಲ ಪ್ರಧ್ವಂಸಿನ ಶ್ರೇಯಸೆ ಮೂಕಂ ಕರೋತಿ ವಾಚಾಲಂ ಪಂಗಂ ಲಂಘಯದೇ ಗಿರಿಂ ಯದ್ಭಾತುಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಪರಮಾನಂದ ಮಾಧವಂ ಯಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ವರುಣೇಂದ್ರ ರುದ್ರ ಮೃಗ ಸ್ವನ್ವಂದಿ ದಿವ್ಯೈಸ್ತಮೇರ್ವೇದೇ ಸಾಂಗವದೇರ್ ಕ್ರಮೋಪನಿಷದೇ ಗಾಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಸಮಗಾಃ ಧ್ಯಾನಾವಸ್ಥಿತ ತದ್ಗನೇನ ಮನಸ ಪಶ್ಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಯೋಗಿನೋ ಯಸ್ಯ ಆನಂದಂ ನ ವಿದು ಸುರಾಸುರಗಣೈ ದೇವಾಯ ತಸ್ಮೈ
So, in the Purushottama Yoga, this 15th chapter, Krishna talked about the the banyan tree, Ashwatha tree, in the first verse. Then, in the second verse, Krishna mentions there how that tree grows, isn't it? The first verse is about the banyan tree. ಊರ್ಧ್ವಮೂಲಂ ಅಧಃಶಾಖ ಅಶ್ವತ್ಥಂ ಪ್ರಾಹೋ ಅವ್ಯಯಂ ಛಂದಾಂಸಿ ಯಸ್ಯ ವರ್ಣಾನಿ ಯಸ್ತುಂ ವೇದಸ ವೇದವೇ. ದ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ವರ್ಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ದಟ್ ಟ್ರೀ. ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ವರ್ಸ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಇಸ್ ಸೇಯಿಂಗ್ ದಟ್ ದ ನೇಚರ್ ಆಫ್ ದಟ್ ಟ್ರೀ, ಹೌ ದ ಟ್ರೀ ವಿಲ್ ಗ್ರೋ. ಅಧಶ್ಚ ಊರ್ಧ್ವಂ ಪ್ರಸಿದಸ್ತಸ್ಯ ಶಾಖ ಗುಣಪ್ರವೃದ್ಧ ವಿಷಯ ಪ್ರವಾಳ ಕತಶ್ಚ ಮೂಲಾನಿ ಅನುಸಂಧಾನಿ ಕರ್ಮಾನಿ ಬಂಧೀನಿ ಮನುಷ್ಯಲೋಕೆ. Krishna gave us a hint there that what does this tree do to us. The tree's nature is it will bind you to the samsara, material existence. That is the business of this tree, Ashwatha tree or the banyan tree. What it does is it binds us to the world. So first thing is to recognize that such a tree exists. And the nature of that tree, Krishna is saying, Adascha Urdhvam, Prasrada Sasya Chaha. The roots goes up and the branches comes down. And it gets the fertilizer from the three modes of material nature. Guna Pravurdha Vishaya Pravala. Three modes of material nature means sense gratification. Isn't it? In the modes of passion, modes of ignorance, modes of goodness. Whatever it may be, all the three modes of material nature supplements the growth of this tree. That's what it does. Guna Pravurdha Vishaya Pravala. Adascha Mulani Anusandhanani Karmani Bandhini Manushya Loki. Because of its roots are going up as well as sometimes it going down, Krishna is also saying that's the way karma operates. In other words, the chances are that once you are on the tree, you can go up or you can go down. In other words, either you can go to the heavenly planets or you can go to the lower planetary systems. That's why when they say the roots goes up or sometimes down, branches goes up or sometimes down. That's why that tree is spoken like that. Because there's a possibility of going up towards the higher planets, or there is a possibility of going to the lower planets, depending on what? Karma anugandhini manushya loke, based on the karma. Karma will decide that whether to go up or to go down. Then in the next chapter, in the next verse, Krishna says that this tree, that very difficult to find the rubam, the form of that tree. Na rubam asyeka tato balambhyate. Because why? Na andaha na adihi. There is no end of that, no beginning of that, and where is that tree located also we don't know. Na andar nando na chadir na jasam pradishtaha. Then ashwatthamenam suvirudhamulam asanga shastrena dhudena chitva. The only thing you can do, Krishna says, that you have to recognize the tree first and you have to learn how to cut that tree from the very root itself. From the very root itself. Ashwathamenam suvirudhamulam asanga shastrena dhudena chitva. And the way to cut that tree is through asanga shastrena, asangatvam. Asangatvam means vairagyam. Once you have cut the tree, Krishna says, once you have cut the tree, only after that, tarparam tarpadam tatparimargidavyam yasmin gadana nivartam dibhuyaha tameva jatyam purusham pura pravati yada pravati prasrada purani. Once the tree has been cut, then the inquiry can begin. Otherwise, the inquiry won't be much of a benefit. You can't, in other words, what Krishna is saying is, till you withdraw from material life, spiritual inquiry is not going to work very well. Both these things don't go together. Withdrawal from the material life is necessary to inquire about the Absolute Truth. And that is what first he spoke about, that vairagyam, asanga shastrena dhadena chitva. After that, Krishna says, in a natural way in a person, if vairagyam is created, developed inside, which we have discussed in detail, what vairagyam means, isn't it? Asangatvam means, gopis have one kind of asangatvam, in the mode of goodness, and then in the mode of passion you have asangatvam, and in the mode of ignorance also you have asangatvam. So asangatvam, asanga shastrena dhadena chitva, Krishna says, this asangatvam can happen in any of the three modes of nature. But when it happens properly in the modes of goodness only, it will normally turn into inquiry, self-inquiry, inquiry about the self-realization, in other words, Krishna consciousness. So that will lead into tadapadam tatparimargidavyam. It will inquire in such a way, yasmin gadana nivartanti puyaha. That inquiry will end up like, what is that speciality of this inquiry? This inquiry is this, that yasmin gadana nivartanti puyaha. That you will find out that through spiritual inquiry you reach a stage where you don't have to come back to this material life again. Don't have to accept another material body. Material body means coming, going, coming, going, coming, going. This cycle is continuously going on with all of us. Is it not? We come here, accept one material body, come here, live here for 70, 80, 90 years, whatever it is, and then we leave this body and go. Where we'll have to accept another body again, either in this planet or somewhere else. But this accepting and rejecting is a part of this process of material existence. Krishna is saying, tadapadam tat parimargidavyam, once you realize this, you know that there is another existence where you don't come back again. That's what Krishna is saying there. Tadapadanda parimargidavyam yasmin gada na nivartanti bhuyaha. This is that liberated state, jivan mukta state. When one does not once for all say goodbye to this material world, no more material existence, finished with that. Yasmin gada na nivartanti bhuyaha. And in order to do that, Krishna says, tam eva jatyam purusham prabhadye. You have to surrender to that Purusha who is controlling this process within every living entity. Krishna situated within the heart of everyone as Santaryami controls this process. And here Krishna only mentioned Tameva Jatyam Purusham Prabhati. But much more explicitly in the 18th chapter Krishna spoke that Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hrudeshe Arjuna Tishtadi Brahmayan Sarvabhutani Yandrarudhani Mayaya Tameva Sharanam Gacha. There it is much more specific than here. Here Krishna only said Tameva Jatyam Purusham Prabhati. But in the 18th chapter Krishna says there Tameva Sharanam Gacha Sarvabhavena Bharata Yal Prasada Alparam Shantim Sthanam Prapsyasi Shashvatam. There is the surrender. To whom to surrender? Antaryami, Krishna, within the heart of everyone. That's where the surrender has to happen. So Krishna talks about the where to surrender, to whom to surrender. That has been spoken in that verse. Then Krishna is saying, a person who has surrendered, what is his state? That is the next verse which we discussed yesterday. Nirmana moha jidasanga doshaha adhyalpa nitya vinivrta kamaha dundvaya vimukta sukha dukkha samnye gacchanti amudha padamavyayam tan. We discussed this verse yesterday. Five things Krishna has spoken there. A person who is liberated while living within this body here, what will be his nature? First thing, nirmana moha. That's the first thing. Second one, jitasanga doshaha. Third one, adhyalpa nityaha. Fourth one, vinivrta kamaha. And fifth one, dundaya vimuktaha. These are the five qualifications of that person. All these five things you will see in him. If he is liberated here, in this body while living here, if he is liberated, he will have these five qualifications in him. Nirmana moha, jitasanga dosha, adhyalpa nitya, vinivrta kama, dundaya vimukta. So, this is what. So, in the last verse, we can see that in the fourth verse, Krishna mentions there, tadapadandan parimorgidavim yasmin gadanan vartandi bhuya. This material existence, which is compared to this Ashwatha tree or Banyan tree, Krishna mentioned before that yado yasmat purusha samsara maya vaksha pravarti prasada nisrada aindra jaliga diva maya purani chirandani. Just like the magician, he creates this maya. Maya is like that, isn't it? Krishna's maya is like a magic. Krishna has created all of these things and he has withdrawn from this and staying behind. We experience maya. Krishna is saying here that this Ashwatha tree or Banyan tree, it's like a maya vriksham, maya tree. From whom it has started, the tree has started from whom? That person is the one to whom you have to surrender. He is the only one who can get you out of this. Because it is in his maya, which we call it as Vishnu maya, Krishna's maya. It is in that maya we are caught up. We are caught up in that maya. So, it is about that Purusha who has created the maya and who has withdrawn from this maya. He has created the maya and he is withdrawn from the maya and we are carried away by this maya, affected by the maya. Krishna says that tameva jadyam purusham prabhadye. That personality who has created that maya, him, to him we should surrender. To him we should surrender. Which is Krishna. Krishna created the maya. Krishna entered into everyone as Antaryami and controls everyone's life in the maya also, inside this maya. So, katham bhuta talpadam gacchanti iti uchyate. What kind of people will reach that stage, what Krishna has spoken? That means after surrendering, tameva chadyam purusham prapadye yada pravarti prasada pirani. That was that fifth verse what we saw yesterday. Nurmana moha jidasanka doshaha adhyalpa nityaha vinivurta kamaha dvandvair vimuktaha sukadukka sapnyer gacchandi amudha padam abheyam tad. We discussed that yesterday. We saw what moham means, illusion, and what manam means, and how moham leads to manam. Nurmana moham. When moham goes away, manam also goes away. That is the way it is. Jida sangha doshaha. We discussed that also. What does sangam means? Salsangatve nisangatvam. Salsangam leads to nisangada. Nisangada leads to nirmohatva. Freedom from illusion comes from nisangada. And nirmohata or freedom from illusion leads into nischalata, nischalatattvam, situated in the self, and that is jivanmukti state. Jivanmukti. Jivanmukti means while living in this world itself, liberated, while living within this body. So that is one thing. Then adhyalpa nityaha, we talked about that yesterday. What adhyalpa nitya means? Adhyalpa nitya means two kinds, either through the jnana margam, inquiring about the self, or through the bhakti margam, surrendering to Krishna. Either way, both are adhyatma nityam. But one word Krishna has put in there, nityam. Nityam means permanent. All the time this has to go on. This, if it is through the bhakti margam, surrendering, completely surrendering to Krishna all the time, as Andaryami inside. Constantly surrendering to Krishna. That is adhyatma nityam. Nityam means always. And if it is in the inquiry stage, self-inquiry, if it is through the jnana margam, constantly inquiring about who I am, self-inquiry, who I am. So, adhyatma nitya. And such a person will be free from kama, from desires. If this inquiry becomes strengthened, self-inquiry becomes strengthened in a person, or if the surrender, sharanagati to Krishna becomes permanent in a person, either way, vinivutta kamaha, that person's material desires will leave him. All desires will leave him. Because if you remember in the second chapter, Krishna mentions there that a person who is spiritually advancing, the symptom of that is prajahadi yada kaman sarvan partha manogadan. All kama must go. Pajahadi yada kaman sarvan, Krishna says, all kinds of desires must go from inside. Partha manogadan, alpanya valpana tushta. He is situated only in the self. Alma, spiritual realization alone is real for him. Material existence has no meaning for him anymore. That is a symptom of self-realization. So, having said that in the second chapter, Krishna is saying the same thing again here. Vinivurta kamaha, all desires must leave him. These are all the symptoms of a jivanmukta person, one who is liberated and living in this world. And lastly, Krishna says the fifth one, dvandvair vimuktaha, he is freedom from the duality. Duality of material existence does not affect him anymore. It's not affect him anymore. So, yesterday we said that self-realization brings a person to a stage that he does not want anymore, no more attraction for material existence or material life, no satisfaction from material desires and material enjoyment. That is why they say, Grihastham Payasam Dhetva Mukshamadhan Durmadihi. That when there is a first class feast at home with all many, many preparations, he will not have to go outside and beg on the street for food, isn't it? He will not do that. Similarly, inside us, when we start experiencing proper spiritual happiness from the self, from the soul, shanti or that anandam that comes from the soul is like that feast. He will not have to go outside looking for any kind of happiness, any kind of happiness. Because we don't receive that spiritual happiness from the self, we go out looking for happiness. Otherwise, there's nothing to look for happiness outside. That's the point Krishna is making there. So, many great devotees have said that. They have also spoken about that. Just like if you throw a few grains outside, cooked rice or anything, the crows will come. But when the crow comes, when he starts eating, he will call everybody to join, isn't it? The crows are nature like that. That's their nature. They will crow, all the crows to come to take part in the food. Similarly, the person who has realized herself, he couldn't sit on his own because he is already opened up inside. Things have opened up inside. The realization of the self has brought him such happiness that he would that happy to share that with anyone. So that is why self-realized person, before he, once it is realization happens to him, when he has realized the truth, before that happens, he wants to share it with others. So, before the body drops away, before the body drops away. So, when this, Krishna uses the word adhyalpa nityam, isn't it? When this adhyalpa nityam happens to a person, that means if he is completely in spiritual consciousness all the time. Adhyalpa nityam means all the time in that spiritual state. What will be the situation then? Vinivurtha kamaha. He has no material desires can come back to him again. There will be no more desires left in this world for him. So, at that time, if you come to that state, Krishna is saying here, he will not be able to see the happiness and distress of this world anymore. Today we think something is happiness, something is distress, isn't it? He does not see happiness and distress like the way we are experiencing today. What does that mean? It means that dvandvayor vimuktaha. He has come out of that dvandva. This happiness, distress, where is it? It is in the mind, isn't it? All the miseries you see in this world, where does that exist? It's in your mind. All the happiness in this world, what you experience, where is that? It is in the mind. And that person has moved away from the mind. He is in the soul. He is in the platform of the soul. While he is in the platform of the soul, what is happening to our mind does not make any meaning to him, does not make any sense to him. That is why they say that self-realized soul, we feel all miseries of this world, all the happiness of this world. We go to a self-realized soul and say to him, oh, how sad it is this. He is not affected by that. He has gone beyond than that. He has come to the state where sukham and dukham, happiness and distress, doesn't exist anymore for him. That is why it is said, dvandvayor vimukta sukha dukha sapne, he says. Sukham and dukham is for us. Why? Because we have got a mind still. For him, there is no sukham, there is no dukham. Because sukham, dukham is dvandvam. Dvandvam means duality. Duality. Is it not? So once you have transcended sukham, dukham, transcended the happiness and distress of this world, he will not be tempted by our explanations of happiness and distress. It won't affect him. And then we say, oh, he has no compassion for others. What can you do? He has gone beyond than this. We think that these are all the mistakes we make when we get to know about a self-realization. Things like this, when we meet a personality who has gone beyond the body, beyond the mind, you should never inquire from him, oh, how are you, how is the family, all these kind of things. You shouldn't go and ask such people. That's wrong. Because we are thinking, they are also thinking like us, isn't it? We go and inquire to people who are spiritually advanced people or realized soul, whoever they may be, that we go and ask them like the way we inquire about in this world each other. That is not allowed. That's not allowed. The only thing you can ask them about, if you want to ask, know anything about spiritual life, you can ask them. But never to make this mistake of asking them about the way we do in relationship with the body. Because asking them anything about the body. It's a common mistake. Everybody makes this mistake. Even Mahatmas, when they live in the ashram, ordinary people come visiting them. They think, oh, when they see the Mahatma in their body, they are not having a proper prasadam like the way we have at home, or they are not dressed like the way we have dressed, so we think they are suffering. And we keep going asking them all sorts of stupid questions. That, oh, can I bring you some nice prasadam cooked for you? So, or bring you some nice clothes to wear. This mistake has been happening all the time. When we see them, we think that they are suffering. From our point of view, they are suffering. From their point of view, we are suffering, but they are not bothered about it. Because what they are saying is that your suffering is due to your ajnana, not due to anything else. Because of your ignorance, you are suffering. That's what their point is. That's why they have no, it's not that they have no compassion. What it is that they don't think that compassion has not the solution. Solution is knowledge. Knowledge is the solution. Bhakti is the solution to the problem. That is why they know very well their own body will be going through a lot of difficulties, miseries of this life. And Krishna is, they know very well that is due to the prarabdham to finish. Due to prarabdham. And so long as the prarabdham is there, this happiness and distress will be there and it will come for them as well. They are also not excluded from that. They also will have the prarabdham, as much as we have the prarabdham. But the difference is that they are conscious of that. It is the prarabdham that we are not conscious of that. That is the difference. When we suffer, we say, we put our hands on the head and start beating, what's happening now, what to do now. But they don't. Why? Because we think that we don't understand. We will recognize, we will say that, oh, it is prarabdham. But when misery comes, we are not able to take it that way. Isn't it? It's my prarabdham. We don't accept it that way. But for them, that is not a problem anymore. Because they know very well, because they have moved beyond the body and they are waiting for the prarabdham to run out. When the prarabdham runs out, the body will drop. And they know about that very well. That is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look, you will see that in the third canto as well as in the 11th canto, both this one verse is quoted. Which one is that? The person who is drunk. Isn't it? Krishna is quoting that. The person who is drunk. You know that verse. Famous verse. It is in the third canto as well as in the 11th canto. Vaso yata adhikrito madina madhandha. That is the verse. In the 11th canto you can see. In the 13th chapter, 36th verse, 11th canto, 13th chapter, 11, 13, 36. And the same verse appears in the Kamala Maharshi's Devahuti conversation also. Deham janashwaram avastidam uthidam va siddho na pashyati yatho jagamat swarupam devadamidamuda devavashat upedam vaso yada parikritam madina madhantha. That is that verse. Deham janashwaram avastidam uthidam va. This deham is nashwaram. Is temporary. That conscious of that all the time. Dehamcha nashwaram, body will go one day. Avastidam uthidam va siddhona vashriyato dhyagamal swarupam devadavedam uda devavashadavedam vaso yada parikritam madhira madhanna. See that line? Devadavedam uda devavashadavedam, that is prarabdham. It is given by devam, material nature. Krishna's material nature has given us this body. Devavashadavedam. When Krishna wants it, he can take it back. Body is not ours. I am not this body. Body is not mine. Body is not meant for my enjoyment. That principle. That's the same thing. Deivadavedam udam. Deivavashadavedam. Krishna has given it its body, Krishna can take it back anytime when he wants it. And how does he live? Vasoyadha parimrdo parigradam madira madhanva. Like the person who is drunk, when he walks back from the pub, like his clothes goes away, he is not conscious of that, isn't it? Similarly, this self-realized soul, he knows very well, vasoyada parigrado madira madhandha, that he knows that this body will drop like the way the cloth has dropped off. He is not aware of that and he will not know about it when the body drops away. He knows very well that the body will only stay in there because like a cloth it is staying. Like the cloth we are wearing, the body is staying with him. And it will go away when the time has come. That's fully conscious of that. Deho vidayo shakham garibarma yaval swarambhagam pradisame kshadam eva sasu tam saprabanja madhiruda samadhi yoga swapnam punarnabhajade pradibuddhavastu. In the next verse. So they are important verses which we discussed before. We will not go into that now. Because Krishna says here that just like when the dress what he is wearing, it drops away, he is not conscious of that. Similarly, Bhagavatam is saying that when his body drops away, he does not know about it, that the body has gone. Can you imagine? To that is Jivan Mukta state. Jivan Mukta state means totally disconnected from the body while living within the body. Earlier Krishna said this, Dehastobi na Dehasta, that stage. He is staying in the body, but he is totally disconnected with the body. That is why when the body drops off, he is not even conscious of that. Madhira madhanda. Just like the person who is intoxicated, his clothes, if it falls off, he won't know about it. Similar situation. So, this Adhyalpa Nitya, Krishna mentions there, isn't it? That Adhyalpa Nitya stage is like that. His stage is like that. He knows very well that one day this body will go. One day the body will go. And even when it drops off, he won't know about it. Why? Dundvair vimuktaha sukha dukkha samyehi. For him, sukham and dukham both are same, equal. Sukha dukkha samyehi. Dukham sukham. Both these things are equal as far as he is concerned. And you will see. So this person, Adhyalpa Nityam, what Krishna mentions there, Adhyalpa Nityam, such a person, if he is a sadhu or a mahalma, if people come up to him and put a garland on him and worship him, or sometime else somebody throws stones at him, he will take both equally. It would not make any impact inside. Normally in this world, if somebody is praised, he feels happy. Somebody is criticized or offended or insulted, he feels miserable, isn't it? That stage he has gone beyond. If someone worships him or offers him a garland and washes his feet, or somebody else throws stones and beats him up, still it's the same for him. He is not affected by that. In one Mahalpa's case, after he has built the ashram, sometimes some thieves attack the ashram and they beat him up. Mahalpa were beaten up by the thieves because they didn't get anything what they wanted from the ashram. The police came and many others came to inquire about that. So the police people and the local population who were very respectful to this Mahalma, says to the Mahalma, how sad it is that you have been attacked like this. So his answer was that, you bring garland and worship me and offer me flowers and fruits and things like that. They offered me stones and sticks and they worship me like that. That's all. They are also another style of worship, he said. This was his answer. So you can see that when one has moved away from the body, that person is not disturbed over the disturbances of what happens in this world. So, so that is that. So, so these two things, sukham, dukham, Krishna is saying there, isn't it? Dunder vimukta sukadukha sapni.
Happiness and distress. One has to free oneself from that. One has to get free oneself from that. This gunam, good and bad, that is called dvandva. To think, we think that happiness is good. We think distress is bad. Is it not? From right from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about this, sukham and dukham. Do you remember? In the second chapter itself, Krishna started talking about it. When he talked about the matrasparshastukandeya, there itself he gave us a clue about it. Shidoshna sukha dukkhada. Shidam, heat and cold, sukham and dukham, happiness and distress. Agamabhayano nityam tam tridikshastu bharada. He mentioned there. What did Krishna say there? Krishna is saying to us that if you know how to deal with happiness and distress, then you will know how to deal with heat and cold as well. What is the technique? What Krishna says there? Krishna is saying to us, when happiness comes, if you know how not to get affected by it, if you develop that mentality, attitude in life, then when distress comes, you won't get disturbed over it. That's the secret of that. What happens to us is, when happiness comes, we are on the top of the world. That means when distress comes also, equally you have to get disturbed over it. Krishna's point is, when happiness comes, if you don't get affected by it, if you know how to withdraw from that happiness, then when distress comes, it won't disturb you. Because this is dvandva. Which one? Happiness and distress. Heat and cold, this is dvandva. In second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken this. Here again, Krishna is saying the same thing. Dvandvair vimuktaha sukha dukha sapnyehi. This sukham dukham is all in the mind. It's not on the spiritual platform. Nothing to do with the spiritual life. It's all on the mind and the mental platform. Which one? Sukham, dukham, heat, cold, everything. And in the Bhagavatam, Krishna called it as gunam dosha. Is it not? When did he say that? In the 19th chapter, if you remember, in the 11th chapter. There, Krishna, Uddhava asked this question. Uddhava asked the question, what is gunam, what is dosha? Do you remember that? There's a whole load of questions Uddhava asked. What is gunam, what is dosha? What was Krishna's answer? Krishna's answer was, guna dosha drishir doshaha. Gunastu ubhayavarjidaha. 11.19.45. That's the verse number. Guna dosha drishir doshaha. To see gunam dosham itself is dosham. Krishna says. Yeah. Guna dosha drishir doshaha. Dosham it is wrong. Because only if you take that attitude, this dundayar vimuktaha will come. Otherwise it won't happen. To see good and bad in this world itself is bad, Krishna is saying. There is no good here, there is no bad here. Not to see good and bad is good. Not to see good and bad is the good thing. That's what he is saying here. Guna dosha drishir doshaha gunastu ubhayavarjidaha. Ubhayavarjida means to give up both, seeing good and bad. That is good. That's what Krishna has spoken that. So you can see what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam is one and the same thing. Isn't it? So where is the difference? It's the same thing. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, Matrasparashastu kamdaya shidoshna sugadukhada agamavayana nityam tam tridikshastu bharada. And here, dundoyirva mukta sugadukha samyehi gachande mudakamma vayamtad. So this intelligence, to give up this, that is good, giving up both, good and bad, gunam dosham, and keeping this mentality always, this is good, this is bad. Same thing, he is my friend, he is my enemy. And same way we treat everything in the world, isn't it? He is right, he is wrong, in that way. So, when you give up both, dvandvam will go. Dundum will go. So that's why Dundir Vimuktaha Sukadukka Sapnihi. Then what will happen? Krishna says, only those people who have given up this Dundvam, Krishna says, Amudha.
They are the only people who are amutha. Practically, what Krishna is saying is, 100% is muthas in this world. That's what he implies. Dondair vamukta sukadukka sapnyer gacchandi amuthaha padam abhayantar. They go back to the self-realization. They realize the self, otherwise not. It is they who have come out of this dungeon who realize the self. Otherwise it's not possible. So Krishna's point is very important that these five things in what is spoken in this verse, Nirmana Moha, Jidasanga Dosha, Adhyalpa Nitya, Vinivrta Kama, Dundvair Mukta, these five things. This is the symptom of a person who is liberated. If you see these five things, and using these five points what Krishna has made, look at the world, and you see how many people in spiritual life has got it. Then you will understand where people stand. We talk about spiritual life, self-realization, guru, GBC, this, that, so many things, isn't it? You put these conditions onto that and see that how many of people who are claiming in that category, spiritual leaders of this world, fall into this, what Krishna is saying here. It's not so easy. Dundvair vamuktaha sukadukka sapnir. Otherwise, everyone who does not fall into this category, Krishna says they are all mudhas. They are all mudha. Krishna loves this word mudha. In many places in the Bhagavad Gita you will see. Mudhoyam nabhijanadi logoma majamavyayam. Krishna says this in the 4th or 5th chapter. Isn't it? Mudhoyam nabhijanadi logoma majamavyayam. Ajari Swami also calls us mudha. Is it not? What does it say? He says, Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam Bhaja, Mudhamate, Mudhamate, Mudhas. We are all Mudhas actually. Mudha means, can they call us Mudha like that? We may get offended by that. No, we shouldn't, because Krishna is saying here that, because Krishna has used this word Mudha, Ajari Swami also used the word Mudha, because that gives the Krishna is open about it. Because as far as Krishna is concerned, that mudha word in the Bhagavad Gita, if you read, this is the worst swearing word which a jnani will use. Mudha. That's their swear word. Mudha. And what can they do? Because what does mudha mean? You have to understand the word mudha itself. Because if your knowledge is covered by ignorance, then that is called maudhyam. In Shastram, they use the word maudhyam. Maudhyam means the real knowledge inside is covered by ignorance. That we have to admit, isn't it? Our knowledge is there. Krishna is saying to us, there is knowledge inside. All of us have got. Because Krishna is inside there, so there is knowledge is there. But then our activities are showing to us, all of us, our activities are showing that we are not living in this world based on that knowledge. We live on based on our ignorance, ajnana. So therefore, maudhyam, one who has got that maudhyam, he is called mudha. He is called mudha. That's all it is. Nothing more than that. But when you say to someone, you are a mudha, they get very disturbed over it, isn't it? So that is why it mentioned in the Bhagavatam also, either you must be a first-class mudha, or you should be a first-class jnani. In both cases, there is no problem. If you are a first-class mudha, then you are not disturbed over anything. You are happy with the world. You enjoy your life here. As much little extract happiness from this world, you will try to extract and satisfied with that. And day by day, you will live in this world in that way, and one day you will die and go from here. There is nothing to feel bad about it. If you are a realized soul, then also there is no problem. There is no problem. If you look into the third canto, there is a verse there about this. That what Krishna says, it is Vidura saying this in the third canto. Vidura is saying, what an unfortunate situation this world is. Because majority of the people, Vidura is saying this too, in the seventh chapter, 3.7.17. Vidura is saying this. He says, two kinds of people don't suffer in this world. First class lotus don't suffer because they don't know anything else. They are completely happy with the body and the bodily happiness and the happiness of this so-called world. Then the jnanis, they are also not disturbed over anything. They are also gone beyond the body and the mind and the intelligence, everything. They have gone to the spiritual platform and they have also escaped. So there is one in between. Yascha mudhagamo loke, yascha buddhe param gadaha, tavubho sukhame vede, klishyanti atya andarito janaha. That's what it is. Yascha mudhagamo loke, mudhas don't suffer in this world. Yascha buddhe param gadaha, one who has gone beyond the mind and intelligence, buddhe param gadaha, they have gone beyond the mind and the body and intelligence, they also don't suffer. Then, tavubho sukhame vede, outside these two categories, there is someone in between. Majority are in that category. Klishyanti andarido janaha. They suffer a lot in this world. Why? Because they are not mudhas completely. At the same time, they have not gone beyond the body and the mind. In between state. That's what Krishna is saying. So Bhagavatam puts it like that. You should not sit in the middle. Either you should become a jnani or you should become a mudha. One of them. Don't sit in the middle. This is Bhagavatam's message. Because if you sit in the middle, you will suffer a lot. And what they call it is distilled fool. That is the way they put it. Atyanta mudha. So, first class mudha, he will be happy in this world. There are many people who are very happy in this world. They say, why all this? Waste time studying Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, when there is so much to enjoy outside. There is one group of people like that, isn't it? So whatever happens in life, they are not disturbed. They'll just get on with it. And looking for, if they can't get happiness here, they'll look somewhere else where they can get it. So, but one who has transcended the intelligence, that is the jnani. He has gone beyond the mind and intelligence. He will also be happy in this world. It is those who are in the middle, their case is pathetic. So this Swarupa Jnana, or once who realizes his own self, Krishna is saying, such a person, gachandi amudha, he is become amudha. He is not mudha anymore. Where does he get? Avyayam padam gachandi. Krishna says there, isn't it? Dundyarupa mukta sukha dukkha sapnyer gachandi mudha padam avyayam. Avyayam padam gachandi. He reaches that stage. Avyayam padam gachandi means he reaches that state where there is no more destruction. And he will never lose it again. And he will be eternally situated in that state of self-realization. And he sees that within himself. This is the most important thing. Gachandi mudha padam avyayam tat. Where does he experience this padam, this state? Within himself. Within himself. Then padam, not that he will go and find it somewhere else, like the way he talk about it. Not that it's going to happen somewhere else. That param padam, and he's not going to go and get there. Right now, here itself, here, now, here in this world, he will experience that param padam. What Krishna says that gachandi amudha padam, that padam avyayam tat. You will see that here. In the Katkena Upanishad, this is what is spoken. Ihacheda vedi, navedi. Ihacheda vedi. Here itself you have, that is the Kena Upanishad saying. Here itself it has to happen. And that what is the symptom of that parama padam? What Krishna is talking about there. Padam avyayam means parama padam, that destination. That state, what is that state? That is the next verse, if you look there. It's one of the most important verses in the Bhagavad Gita. We can say from the bhakti point of view so many things we say. But from Krishna's point of view in the Bhagavad Gita, this is the state what Krishna is talking about. And this verse has been taken directly from the Kathopanishad. It's a Kathopanishad verse, And Krishna has taken that, a slight modification Krishna has made, and put it into Bhagavad Gita.
Nathadvasayade
suryo
Nashashango na bhavaka
Yadyatvana
nivartandhe
Tadhama
paramam mama
Nathadvasayade suryo
Nashashango
na bhavaka
Yadyatvana
nivartandhe
Tadhama
paramam
mama
Nathadvasayade
suryo
Nashashango
na bhavaka
Yadyatvana
nivartandhe
Tadhama
paramam mama.
Krishna is saying about his abode.
What
is Krishna means?
What
is his abode is?
That
is what he is talking about.
This
verse is
a famous
Upanishad
mantra.
These are all
mantra.
All
the
verses in
this chapter
are just mantras.
They are
Upanishad
mantra,
it is.
Upanishad mantras
they are.
And
with
a
very little
difference,
Krishna
has put it into
the
into
Bhagavad Gita.
In
the Kathopanishad,
the
same verse
comes.
Nadatra
suryo
bhadi,
na chandra
tarakam,
nemo
vidyido
bhadi,
kudayomani.
Kudayomani
tameva
bhatam
anubhadi
sarvam
yasya
bhasya
sarvam
idam
vibhadi.
This
is that verse
in
the
Kathopanishad.
That
verse
Krishna
has
brought it
as
here.
Nathat
bhasayade
suryo
na
shashango
na
bhavaga
yadyatvana
nivartande
tadhama
paramam
mama.
There is
absolutely
no difference
between
the Kathopanishad
words
and
this
Bhagavad Gita
words.
Nathra
suryo
bhadi,
exactly
the
same thing.
Where
the
sun
doesn't
shine.
Moon
doesn't
shine.
No
stars
are shining.
Nema
vidyido
bhadi.
Kudayo
bhandam
anupati
sarvam.
But
by
whose
presence
the
sun
is shining,
the
moon
is
shining,
the
stars
are
shining.
There
is no
sun,
there
is
no
moon,
there is
no
stars.
Krishna
says,
Adan
bhasayade
suryo.
In
Krishna's
abode,
there
is
no
sun,
there
is no
moon,
there
is
no stars.
But
by
whose
presence
the
sun
and the
moon
and
the
stars
are
shining?
That's
my
abode.
In
other
words,
Krishna
is that
abode.
Abode
is
this.
Abode,
when we
say abode,
that
it
is only
due to
the
presence
of
Atma,
sun
is
shining.
It's
only
due
to
the
presence
of
Atma,
moon
is
shining.
It's
only
due to
the presence
of
Atma,
so
the
stars
are shining.
Without
presence
of
Krishna
there,
Atma,
Krishna,
without
them,
Krishna's
presence,
none of
them
can
shine.
It's
not
due
to
hydrogen
and
helium.
It's due
to
Krishna
present
there
in
the
sun.
Sun
is
shining.
That
is why.
Natatra
suryo
bhadi,
na
chandra
taragam
nema
vidyido
bhadi,
kudo
vayam
anivadayama,
bhantavana
anubhadi
sarvam,
tasya
bhasa
sarvamidam
vibhadi.
Tasya
bhasa
sarvamidam
vibhadi.
But
whose
power
this
whole
creation
is
moving
and
working
and
things
happening
here?
That
is,
Krishna
is
saying,
that's
my
abode.
That's my
abode.
In
other
words,
Atma
is
the
basis
in
everything
is
happening
here.
Is
it not?
If
you
think about
it.
Because of
the
presence
of
Atma,
life
in
this
world.
Otherwise,
where
is life?
Because
there
is Atma
inside,
every
living
being
is
working,
moving,
doing
things.
Inside,
outside.
Everything
what
happens
in the world
outside
is
to the
presence
of
Krishna
there.
Atma
is present
there.
So
that
is what
that
verse
is
talking about
in
the
Upanishad's
words
Krishna
has taken
here.
So
here
in
the
Upanishads
also
there
are
says
that
there
is
no
sun
in
Krishna's
abode.
Krishna's
abode
there
is
no
sun.
Tatra
suryo
bhadi.
And
Krishna
says here,
it
is
without
the
help
of
the
sun,
Krishna's
abode
shines.
Krishna's
abode
shines.
Why?
Because
it
is
spirit.
It's completely
spirit.
Na
shashango.
Krishna
uses
the word
na
shashango.
Why
that word
shashango?
Shashango
means
that
the
poets
describe
the
moon.
If you
look
into the
moon,
you
will
see some
dark
spots
there.
isn't it? The dark spots are compared to the ears of the rabbit. Rabbit's ears. The poets compare it like that. That is how the moon has got the name Shashanga. Shashanga is a word used for the moon because of the rabbit's ears. It looks like a rabbit in the moon when you look from here. Very similar to a rabbit, appears like that. If you look at your full moon, you will see a rabbit present in the moon. The darkness in the moon, if you look, you will see it's called, that's why it's called Shashanga. So what Krishna says here, that one who keeps a rabbit in his body, therefore is called a Shashanga. So that Shashanga or moon also does not illuminate because of any light. Because of presence of Krishna there, we will say, of course, the scientists will say it's a reflection of the sunlight and all that. That's okay. But who is reflecting from the moon? When the sunlight is falling, who is reflecting from the moon? That is Krishna. That's the way we have to see that. Not everything based on the matter, thinking that, oh, matter is there, so therefore it is reflecting. No, that's not how you see it. You see that when sunlight falls on the moon, the power to reflect from the moon, where is it coming from? It's coming from Krishna. Krishna's presence in the moon is the power that reflects that sunshine from the moon, even if it's coming from the sun. Na shashango, na bhavaga. Similarly, Krishna says here that fire also, the light of the fire is also me. Krishna is that light of the fire. Agni, there is no fire in Krishna's plan abode to give light. There's no fire, there's no stars, there's no moon, there's no sun either. So, yadyatvana nivartande tadhana paramam mama. Krishna says, that once you have reached there, na nivartande, you don't come back again. You don't come back again. That means once you realize the self, it's all spoken in a different way, that's all. Once you realize the self, you don't come back into another material body again. That's what it means. Yadyatvana nivartande tadhana paramam mama. Again, the same thing what Krishna has spoken in the last verse. Gacchanti amudavadam abhyayantar. Same thing. So, once you have reached there, it's finished. Everything is over. And you can only go there, you can't come back. You can go there, but you can't come back from there. What does that mean? It means that once you have realized the truth, self, inside, finished everything. Everything is over. They say there's this, was a big fruit, I think it's called Buddha, isn't it? Which the elephant eats. The beauty of that is, it's this size, almost a golf ball size. The elephants eat that fruit. And when they eat it, the whole ball-like size, golf, cricket ball size it is, it goes inside and it comes out in the same form. When the elephant passes out, it comes out in the same way. But the difference is, whatever that is inside the fruit, that's been taken out. It's an amazing thing. Elephant eats that, elephant is fond of that Buddha pole. Once it eats that, it takes the inside part and the fruit comes out as it is outside. So Krishna is saying here, once you reach the self-realization state, if you go there, then you don't come back. You don't come back here again. What remains is what you are. Yadgatvan nivartande tadham paramam mama. That is my abode, Krishna says. Dhamma means thing. And this is why that dhamam, when it came to Srimad Bhagavatam, how did they put in? Dhamna svena sada nirastha kuhagam satyam param bhimahi. Remember in the first verse? Dhamna svena sada nirastha kuhagam satyam param bhimahi. That dhamam, sada nirastha kuhagam, all the time it is full of illumination. There is no darkness there. There is no darkness. See, because we don't understand what the spiritual realization is, therefore we have to put it in a way which people will understand. That is why we say, Vaikuntham, Kailasam, Gopalokam, and so many places, we go there, Because if you say like that, it's much more easy for the mind to get it. Otherwise, mind find it very difficult when you say all these things, complicated way. So to make it easier, we say, oh, in Goloka Vrindavanam we go, or Kailasam we go, or Vaikuntham we go. Nobody has gone there and come back and told us that it was like that, isn't it? What we know is, what is written in the Shastra, other things. But the reason why they are described in that way, in Bhagavad Gita there is no reference to any of that. Bhagavad Gita is only saying the nature of that Krishna's abode. It is like this, you go there, you don't come back. That's all. That's all it says here. You go there, you don't come back. In other words, you realize the truth, you don't come back again. But to make it easier for us, it has been spoken that you go there and then you don't come back, and then you give a little bit explanation about the abode in different ways, in Bhagavatam one way, and in the Puranam another, Shivaranam another way, and in another Puranam another way. So all this description there, but that we should not get completely pulled by that. Rather, we should more focused on this one, what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying to us, the very nature of this self-realization is this, that you reach my abode, from there you don't come back again. That's the most important thing. You don't come back again. That is the beauty of that. And that nature of that abode is, Krishna is saying, the sun and the moon and the stars, all of them are not present there in that abode. But that place on its own is capable of illuminating itself, self-illumination. It is by His presence only the sun and the moon and the stars are giving light. The light from the sun, moon and the stars are coming. So, it is that same force which is in the sun and the moon and the stars who is sitting in our body and giving us the capacity for our eyes to see. The eyes are able to see because of that. It is the same potence power which illuminates the sun, moon and the stars, illuminates our intelligence also, makes the intelligence to operate, makes the mind to function. And through all the senses, the same power of the Atma goes to the world and presents the world before us, isn't it? We experience this world how? Because Krishna is inside, therefore we experience the world. Otherwise this world doesn't exist. That is the principle. That is the principle behind it. So, Savyeti Vedyam Nata Tasyasti Vedaha. And nobody understands this. Nobody takes notice of that, isn't it? So that is why Krishna is saying here, nobody sees that person who is inside all of us, but He sees everyone. Sitting inside all of us, He is seeing and experiencing everything, but no one is able to see that person who is inside, who is seeing everybody. Who is seeing everybody. Because He has got the capacity to illuminate on His own. He doesn't require any other external source to illuminate Him, to make His presence aware of. So, just like if you want to see, suppose there is total darkness, and only if you have a light, you can see the place, isn't it? Otherwise you won't see it. So, that means, if there is a lamp, it is self-illumination there. But when you see this vastu inside, which is self-illuminating, you see, when you look at the body, we have the five senses. Shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham. Sound, touch, smell, hear and taste. These five senses are functioning. How can they function? Because of the presence of Krishna inside. Due to Krishna's presence, they are experiencing various things through the mind. And that is what we call it as anubhuti, or anubhuti svayam prakasha anubhutitva. Vedantis will say like this, that this experience of the presence of the self, due to which all other faculties of the body are functioning. These five senses is functioning. The mind is functioning. Intelligence is functioning. So many things are functioning. Body is functioning. By whose presence all these things are functioning? What comes from Him is anubhuti. Is anubhuti. What comes from Him? The original source is anubhuti. What is experienced by the mind, by the intelligence, by the senses, that is all pradidhi, perception it is. If the anubhuti is not there, pradidhi won't be there. You see the point? Anubhuti is the engine behind it, the driving force. That is why this self-illumination nature of the soul, which is within everyone, that is the whole thing which is driving this body, driving this world, driving everything here. It is that presence, and that is the same thing Krishna is saying, is driving the sun, driving the moon, driving the stars. The vastu is one, is not two. Same vastu which is in each one of us, driving this body, mind, intelligence, senses, everything, operating. It's the same force that's operating in the sun, in the moon, in the stars. Their gross body is different than our gross body. That's all the difference is, the sun's gross body. So because of the presence of that power, Krishna says here that the sun is shining, the moon is shining, the stars are shining, and the whole world is shining. We experience the presence of this world due to presence of Him inside. He's inside. So that knowledge, and it is knowledge, it is the nature of that is that power is knowledge, and therefore he is called and avabodham, bodham or consciousness, that is consciousness. That thing is addressed in the Bhagavatam as avabodham, nyapti, chaitanyam and dhamam. This dhamam, the word, is another word for that. Here, Krishna uses the word dhamma. Mujodha uses the word yakti. Isn't it? Vasudeva uses the word prajna. They all used different words. Krishna uses the word here as dhamma. Vastu is the same. One and the same thing. You get it? But only by, just because, now when you say dhamam, suppose if I say to somebody dhamam, you will immediately take it, dhamam ki jai, mayapur dhamam ki jai. So you got used to that way, isn't it? Dhamam means a place, immediately, that's the way mind will interpret that. You shouldn't do that. You should not interpret it in that way. Dhamam here means that state of consciousness. Yamti, prajna, sutratmava, brahmam. All this is addressing the one and the same thing. Bhagavad Gita is like that. In so many places you will see Dundvadhitan, Gunadhitan, Sthita Prajnan, Bhakta, Karma Yogi, Jnani, all means the same thing only. They are all not different people. We take it as, this is different, this is. There is no difference. If you look into their qualities, they are all same. They are not different. So similarly here, Krishna calls it as dhamam. Tad dhamam paramam mama. Tad dhamam. That's called dhamam. So, because once that dhamam, that state of consciousness has come, then the movement of the mind stops. Mind stops its movement. And that is why Krishna says here, earlier he also said, na nivartande. Remember that? Yad gatva na nivartande. Na nivartande means, That movement stops. Movement of the mind has stopped. You know what that means? It means that due to the movement of the mind, we are experiencing material existence. If the mind stops, that means there is no more thought waves coming inside. Completely stopped the mind. That is that state. No thought waves anymore. That is practically, there is no mind existing anymore. That is what Krishna is saying there. Yad gatva na nivartande tad dhamam paramam mama. That is my abode, Krishna is saying there. So, Srishti, what does creation mean? Creation basically means movement, chalanam. So, once you have reached that state, achalam. Achalam means no movement. That is why in the second chapter Krishna mentioned Nityam Sarvagatasthanu Achaloyam Sanatana Achalam. Achalam means The mind is not anymore, no more movement inside. Thought waves coming, pulling this way, that way. Mind's activity has come to a dead stop. Once you have reached that state, this statement, this movement of the mind will come to a stop and it will never move again. That is what this verse is saying. So that's such an important verse, this verse. Which one? This. Natatva sayade suryo, na shashango, na pavaga, yadgatvan nivartande, tatham paramam mama. Famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita. That when we refer to self-realization, what happens when you leave this body? When this question comes, this is the answer for that. That state you reach, spiritual state it is, spiritual consciousness, that's where you get there. So, here, last words, Krishna mentioned here, Nirmana moha jidasanga dosham adhyalpa nitya vinivrta kamaha dvandver vimukta sukadukka sarnyaya gachanya mudapadam avyayantar. So, in there, Krishna spoke about the process, how to free oneself from the material distress, from the material existence, isn't it? So, he mentions how to cut that tree of material existence from the very root itself. What is that root? Root is our false ego, ahankara, isn't it? Ahankara is the root. Because of the presence of false ego, that we have all other problems. Dvandvam, due to false ego. Moham, due to false ego. Jidasanga dosham, sanga dosham, due to false ego. Kamam, due to false ego. All our problems is due to the presence of false ego. So therefore, the false ego is the root of this tree, Ashwata tree. Which tree? This tree, what is called as the banyan tree. The root of that tree is false ego. And Krishna says, there are two ways you can cut that root of that tree, which he has spoken before. First one, the direct process. What is the direct process? Self-inquiry. That's the direct process. The second one, Krishna spoke about that, is Sharanagari, surrender, bhakti. There's no other way. There's only two options Krishna has given here. Either by complete surrender to Antaryami inside, Krishna inside the heart, and surrender unto Him all the time, continuously surrender unto Him. We discussed yesterday, what does surrender mean? Surrender means, wherever Krishna has put us in this world, in whatever situation Krishna has put us in, accepting everything that comes in life without complaint. You can't complain after you have surrendered. If you are complaining again, that means you are not surrendered. It's a very tall order, isn't it? Most of the people think that bhakti is simple. Bhakti is not simple. We misunderstand bhakti. That is what makes it simple. Because of misunderstanding, it becomes simple. Actually, bhakti is not simple. It is that surrender is that is bhakti. Not all the other things what we do in this world. We think so many other things. We interpret bhakti with the mind. That's the problem. But spiritual life is beyond mind, beyond intelligence. Whatever Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, unless we, as it is accepted, there is no meaning, there is no other question. Here, Krishna's point is Sharanagati, surrender, completely surrender to me. Then you can have that. Which one? This, cut that tree. You can cut, I'll cut the tree for you, Krishna says. But you have to surrender unto me completely. That is Krishna's point. But that surrender means that you cannot complain anymore anything what happens in life because you have surrendered. Surrender means what? You have handed over your body, mind, intelligence, ego, everything to Krishna. Once you have handed over to Krishna, you have no right over it. Then when some problem comes to the body, you can't say to Krishna, why you are giving me trouble? Then Krishna will ask you, you have handed it over to me, then why you are asking? So that Krishna can ask you that question, is it not? So proper surrender means that. To that 100% surrender when it happens, Krishna says, that tree is cut. I'll cut the tree in that time. That is the one process, bhakti process. The other process is, direct process is the that self-inquiry, which is a process what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and also in the Upanishads, the same process. All other All other processes, for example, Ashtanga Yogam, Raja Yogam, Karma Yogam, and all other things, is only to make us mature for one of these two, to preparing us for these two. That's all it is. Even Karma Yogam, to that extent, it is only to prepare us to either for Jnanam or for Bhakti. To prepare us either for Jnanam or for Bhakti. All the sadhana is also like that, to prepare us for this. Because if you keep on doing sadhana for a long period of time, finally you will get tired after sadhana, isn't it? 30, 40 years you have done chanting, dancing, feasting, everything. And one day you will get tired, your body won't take it anymore. So at that time you will say to Krishna within yourself, I have done all I can, but I didn't get you yet. That stage will come to everybody. Nobody is exempted from that. So that depends on the intensity with which you have put all your effort, and you will get tired one day. So that is what Krishna is saying here, that this all other processes like sadhana, upasana, anishtanam, and all other things is only to prepare that person for one of these two, jnana margam or bhakti margam or bhakti margam. So in reality both are same. In that you will know it when you go through that process from the realized souls. If you observe them, you will see they don't distinguish between jnanam bhakti like that. They don't distinguish like that. Because if you start inquiring, who am I? What's my identity? What's my real nature? Then you will realize one day the person whom you are inquiring about itself is not a real thing. Why? Because this I am whom I am thinking about is false ego, isn't it? With which I am identifying. What actually existing is only pure consciousness, nothing else. And that is the jnana margam, jnanam process. So, but when we talk about it, we will say like this. In bhakti also the same thing happens. If you read Narada Bhakti Sutram, he will mentions there that when he talks about that final state of bhakti, when he discusses final state of bhakti, what does he say? He says, Anyashrayanam tyagaha ananyaha, he says. Ananya bhakti. What is that ananya bhakti means? Ananya bhakti means ultimately realizing that I don't exist. Means false ego doesn't exist, only Krishna exists. That is that state, pure bhakti. Only Krishna exists. And that is the same realization that comes to a jnani also. Finally he realizes that false ego doesn't exist, only Krishna exists. So what happens inside a person is the same thing. In bhakti what you are doing is that you surrender everything to Krishna and say to Krishna that only you are existing, I don't exist. And that is why that is the proper surrender, paying obeisances means actually that. In that situation, only Krishna exists, I don't exist. I don't exist. That is why we fall down when we pay our obeisances, for this reason only. If you are standing up means ego exists. Ego is the one that keeps it like this. When the ego goes away, it falls off. That's why we pay obeisances falling down on the ground. For this reason only. It's an indication that there is no false ego in me. Although, when he wakes up, the false ego comes back. That's another thing. This is the beauty of that false ego. He will go when you lie down. When you lie down, but some people even when lying down, that false ego comes back to them. So whatever it is, the nature is like this, principle is like this. That when you pay your obeisances, that means there is no false ego. That is why I'm lying down. False ego keeps this body straight. Like this. So with that, Krishna is saying here, when that disappears, ahangaram disappears, ahankriti goes away. Two things, ahangaram and ahambodham. Ahangaram and ahambodham. Ahangaram is ahankriti. Ahankriti is also the same thing. And with the result is this, when ahangaram disappears, birth, death goes away. Birth, death disappears with that. So that is why Krishna calls it as prapatti. The word he uses is prapatti. Krishna mentions that in the fourth verse. He says, tameva chadyam purusham prapadye prapatti. Prapatti. Prapatti means prapatti. It is called prapatti. Prapatti means sharanagati. Sharanagati means surrender. English word is surrender, but in Sanskrit we have plenty of words. Prapatti, sharanagati, so many words mentioned in the same way. So, Krishna says, tameva chadyam purusham prapatti. Surrender unto him, he says. So, because it yada pravarti prasrida purani, because it is from him, that Purusha, to whom you are surrendering, it is from him all karma has started. See, mind is moving because of karma. It is called karma chalana. Karma chalana. Thought waves that comes to the mind, the origin of that is due to karma. We got stuck in the karma. Karma chalana and mind, creation, all this is one and the same thing. What we call as creation, what we call as the mind, what we call as karma, they are all one and the same thing. Because if you look into the result of all that, it is one and the same. Karma creates chalanam in the mind. Due to that, we feel the creation. It is due to the movement of the mind you experience the creation. Otherwise, creation doesn't exist as far as Shastram is concerned. Creation means what? Variegatedness, isn't it? All different things in the creation you feel. Oh, initially when you come to spiritual life, your inquiry will be, who created all these wonderful things? And therefore creation process is spoken. Otherwise creation process has no meaning much. That is why in Puranam itself there is 10 types of creation spoken. Then in the Bible, then in the Quran, everywhere you find creation spoken in different ways. But that's immaterial. The important point to remember is this. Karmam causes chalanam, chalanam movement of the mind. And due to the movement of the mind, we experience creation here. We experience creation here. That is what Krishna is saying here. That yata pravarti prasrida purani. Prasrida purani. It is from him everything has started, including the creation. Including the creation. Prasrida purani. Prasrida purani. That is what it is. So, surrender unto him and become adhyatma nishtha. Adhyatma nitya vinivrta kama. So, Krishna spoke about that in that next words, such jnanis who have come to that state. That is that fifth verse, isn't it? Narmana moha jidasanga doshaha adhyatma nitya vinivrta kamaha dundayarva mukta sukha dukkha sabnyer gachandi amodhavadam avyayanta gachandi amodhavadam avyayanta. So, five things Krishna has spoken there. Remember them, they are important. Narmana moha, number one. Jidasanga dosha, number two. Then, third. Adhyalpa nitya, number three. Vinivurta kama, number four. And finally, dundvayam muttaha, number five. If these five things are present in anyone, then Krishna says, he is the one who is in that state. He is the one who is in that state. First thing is Nirmana Moha. Manam and Moham, that is left, that's gone from him. Number two, Jadasanga Doshaha. No connection, attachment to any Sangam, to any sense enjoyment or to Sangha Dosham has gone. He has no connection with the world. Complete detachment from the world. And number three, Adhyalma Nityam. That means all time, continuously attached to the Atma, to the soul, meditation on the soul, self-inquiry in other words, or surrendering, always surrendering to Krishna. Number four, that all desires have left him. Vinivurta kamaha, all desires have left him. Number five, Krishna is saying here, sukham, dukham, good, bad, all these things have gone from him. Dvandvam has gone from him. And he has reached the state of samadhi, Krishna is saying there. So such people, Krishna says, amudhaha, they are not mudhas anymore. All others are all mudhas. Their mokyam has gone. Why? Because that coverage, you remember, there is a vichevam and avaranam. There is a strong cover of the ethic blanket or cover around the soul of ignorance. That coverage is gone. That covering has completely gone away. And such people, Krishna says, avyayam padam gachandi. Gachandi amoda padam avyayam tad. And they reach that state there is never be any more, any further movement of their mind. And they are people who are enjoying the spiritual life. They are in the spiritual life and they are in their own empire, spiritual empire. Spiritual empire, they are situated. And they will never lose it. They will never lose it. This is the important principle. This verse has to make us aware that there is a separate existence called spiritual existence. And that spiritual existence, the nature of that spiritual existence is what Krishna is talking here, which is completely different from material existence. Material existence is what Gunapravardhanam Shai Pravala, what we saw before, what the other verses say, that Ashwatha tree, Banyan tree and all that. But one who has cut that tree and who has come to the spiritual existence, his nature, his existence will be like this verse. Nirmana moha jidasanga dosha adhyalpa nitya vinivurta kama dundvaira vimutta sukhadukha satnya. Such a person, gachandya muda padam avyayam tat. That is his state. You remember we mentioned this many times before, Ramatirtha story. Swami Ramatirtha. When he was in Lahore, when he was teaching in the university, if you read that book, you will see him, his personality. One, while living in this world, he was in that state for a very long period of time, always. As Ramatirtha, he, at a very early age, he was a professor of mathematics, I think, in the University of Lahore. And at the age of 31, he was realized the truth. Very early he left this world also. But the remaining time, in the woods of self-realization, if you read that book, you will see how he conducted the business in this world. Completely in that liberated state. In the liberated state. So, the sannyasa state, he reached that samadhi stage in 1906. He became samadhi. And he gave up his body in the Ganges river. Jala samadhi it's called. Sannyasis sometimes give up their body in the river and they could leave the body when they wanted. And he gave up his body in the Ganga river and that is called Jala samadhi. Jala samadhi. Sudarshan Brahmendra gave up his body in Kaveri river, also Jala samadhi. So he went to he went to America. That story is famous. He went to America and because some devotees who were with him were insisting that he should come there and speak Vedanta philosophy to the people there. And when he went there, he traveled there with a one cloth bag with him. There was nothing else. And when he went there, when the Sacramento River, when he boarded down there, he lived on the banks of a river there in America for a long period of time. And everyone was amazed by his this personality of Ramatirtha. And that book what he wrote, his disciples compiled that book later, which is available still in the Woods of God Realization. He mentions there that he was so famous at that time, Roosevelt, the president, he wanted to see him. He came to see him and they invited him for dinner. Roosevelt invited Ramatirtha for the dinner and Ramatirtha, whenever he spoke, he didn't speak as a person. He always spoke Rama. Rama won this, Rama did this. So, even to the president he spoke, Emperor Rama, he says. Because his friends told him, when you meet the president, you shouldn't speak like that. Because after all, he is the president and you have nothing, got only this cloth bag with you. But he says, that's alright, I know what to tell him, he said. And he told him that, instead of saying Rama, he says Emperor Rama. He says to the president, to the president. So president says to him, where is your empire? Because what does president understand about all these things, what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita? So Ramatirtha says to him that your empire, you have control over it for 4 years or 5 years. This is in America, president election is 4 years, I think. And then if you are lucky, you will get one more term. So maximum 8 years. After that, your empire is finished. My empire doesn't finish like that. This empire, what Ramatirtha is talking about, is that spiritual empire, what is inside him, where he lives in that empire. And you are always frightened when I am going to lose your empire. I don't have that fear anymore, that I am going to lose my empire. he says to him, Mr. President, you are possessed by your possessions. You are possessed by your possessions. But one who doesn't have anything, he is not possessed by anything. He is not possessed by anything. He is always independent, completely independent. And normally what happens is the king, the empire, the country, what you are holding on to, finally what happens is the country is holding on to you strongly than what you are holding on to country. You can see that. Generally, our weakness is we get attached to something. And then we get, so that object may not have any attachment for us, but our attachment to the object is very strong. Very, very strong. You can see this, like in the morning, people walk with the dog in the hand. Isn't it? Dog is not attached to anybody. If you just let the dog go, it will go on its own way. But you are attached to the dog, so you are holding on to it. You don't want to leave it. So, dog is independent, but you are not independent. That is the principle. Dog is independent. If you don't control him, he will go wherever he wants to go, he will go. After all, that also wants freedom like us, isn't it? So, but we don't allow that because we are attached to that dog. Therefore, we are holding him back. So, therefore, Krishna is saying, there's the same thing Ramakrishna is also saying to President. Because you are attached to your so-called country and your presidentship and all that, you are unable to leave it. So therefore, your so-called empire one day will throw you out, and where you go, going after that, you're finished. Then you don't have any control over that. So that is what he's saying here. So Krishna is saying here, the same thing here, that this Gacchandi Amuda Padam Avyayam Tanam, this nature of this abode of Krishna is, it is, Padam is Avyayam. You cannot lose it once you get it. That's the difference. Gacchandi Amuda Padam Avyayam Tanam. Avyayam it is. You can't lose it anymore once you got it. Everything else in this world, when you get it, you lose it later, isn't it? That's the nature of this world. Any other empire, what you have built, so many big, big empires have come and gone. Ottoman Empire, Roman Empire, British Empire, Mughal Empire, this empire, that empire, so many empires. They've all come and gone. They couldn't stay. But this empire, Krishna says, that you will never lose it. And that is exactly that Prahlada says to Narasimha also. Prahlada mentions this to Narasimhamurti. He says to him that great, great demigods, they come up to you, and those personalities, they got frightened when my father looked at them in a very heavy way. When Hiranyakashipu, the demigods got frightened seeing Prahlada's father, isn't it? When Hiranyakashipu looked at them in a very tough way, they all got frightened. And they lost their, demigods left everything and ran away from there when they heard Hiranyakashipu is coming. You know that in the seventh canto. When Hiranyakashipu walked into the heavenly planets, Jagur Mahendra Asana Mojanastidam Vishwavasustum Buru Asmadadaya. In the Bhagavatam, there is a beautiful verse. When Hiranyakashipu walked into the palace of Indra, Indra's planet, in the heavenly planet, Indra got up from the seat. Hiranyakashipu with his left foot kicked his seat to show it to him that this is how much he cares for him. Just to insult him, he did that. Who? Hiranyakashipu. To show to Indra, because generally the demigods are against the demons, all the time wanted to fight with them. But when the demons got the opportunity, Mahabali has done this, Hiranyakashipu has done this to show their authority over the demigods. So, Jagur Mahendrasanam Ojanastidam. That Mahendrasanam is Indra's throne. Indra won't like it if somebody comes and kicks his throne like that, would it? Jagur Mahendrasanam Ojasastidam Vishwavasu Stumburu Asmadadaya. Sri Narada Maharshi mentions there. That this is how he went into the heavenly planets. So Prahlada says to Narasimha Murthy, what is the point in talking about that? That my father, who has done all that things, he is lying here now, completely ripped off by you. You have put him into this state. And he mentions, if you look into the seventh canto, you will see there, the Prahlada's words itself is, Rayakalatram 7739. Rayakalatram Kashavasudadayo Grihavahi Kunjara Koshabodaya Sarve Arthagama Chanavangura Yusha Kurvandi Martyasya Kriyat Priyam Chala. Prahada saying, Rayakalatram Kashavam Sudadayo Grihavahi Kunjara Koshabodaya. All material opulences, sarve arthakamaha chanabhango ayushaha, all of them are momentary. They don't have anything, any existence. They come and they go. And kurvande martyasya kriyal priyam chalaha. It is only for the sake of all these things people are working in this kriyal priyam. How long will they last? Prabhupada is asking here. Because once you know this, that these things are not going to last very long, what we have worked so hard and accumulated and achieved in this world, and what will happen, finally it leaves you, it leaves you. And when vairagyam comes, like in the case of Prahlada, that vairagyam is so high in Prahlada, Prahlada is saying that, vairagyam comes, that is the first step in bhakti. Bhakti, first step is that vairagyam. If vairagyam comes strongly, then bhakti will become very strong. That is the way it works. Jnanam, vairagyam, bhakti, three things in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? So if vairagyam gets strengthened in a person, the bhakti in that person will also be very strong. This is the way it happens to a person. So, similarly, if bhakti becomes very strong, naturally he will have a strong vairagyam in him. You cannot separate these two, bhakti and vairagyam. If there is strong bhakti, there will be strong vairagyam. If there is strong vairagyam, there will be strong bhakti. They always coexist. They exist together. So, so Krishna says here, Gopis also mentions this. Gopis are the best example. Gopis says in the Gopiyagita, isn't it? Itara raga vismaranam naam adhara veeranaste adharamadam. Krishna, Gopis are saying to Krishna that when we got attached to you, our attachment for everything else is gone in this world. Itara raga. Itara raga means attachment to all other attachments in this world. Gopis answer to Krishna. Gopis are saying to Krishna, when Krishna told Gopis to go back, Gopis are saying, our attachment to the children had gone. Attachment to the husbands have gone. Attachment to the parents have gone. Family members have all gone from us. And Krishna wanted Gopis to say this, to show that the power of bhakti. So when there is proper bhakti, all attachment to this world will go from inside. This is the important point. Itara raga vismaranam nanam. So here, when we have detachment for other objects in this world, then automatically vairagyam will come into a person's mind. And the way it works is, if vairagyam happens first in a person, then what will happen is, the mind will inquire about Atma, about the soul. If vairagyam happens first. If bhakti happens first, he will throw away everything first. He will immediately. That is a proof that no one, none of us have reached anywhere near to that. This is the proof of that. If you have to, you have to look at it from the Shastram. Shastram is telling us, this jnana vairagyam, they are always together. Always together. It's no point in beating drums and saying we are all highly advanced and highly realized soul. Nothing is going to work here. All that matters is, if vairagyam is there, then Krishna is saying here that the mind will naturally will be attracted to self-realization. In a natural way. That is the power of that vairagyam. Similarly, if there is by chance bhakti happened in a person's heart, immediate impact on the person is he will renounce this world. From the vairagyam will naturally appear in that person. So because he will know bhakti has happened in him, he will know that There is no point in holding on to anything in this world. It's all a waste of time at the end, isn't it? Ultimately, we all get cheated in this world. When we leave this world, you feel, why? What did I do all my 60, 70 years in this world? What did I gain from this? Is it not? You feel that. Time of death, that's what the thoughts will come. All the years I spent here. And what is the result? Net result? Family goes one way, money goes another way, everything goes and you go your own way. So what was ultimately to gain from anything, any of these things? So that is why Krishna is saying that if proper bhakti has come, then you will know that there is no point in holding on to anything else in this world. Vairagya will also naturally be there. So these two things, bhakti and vairagya, they are complementary. They complement each other. So vairagya, Krishna says here, that with the vairagya, Krishna's develops in a person. Naturally, first thing he will do is that he will surrender to Krishna. Sharanagati. Sharanagati will happen. And sarana, when he does that proper Sharanagati, Krishna says there, that gacchandi amula padam avyayam. Padam avyayam gacchandi. So, why he is saying like that? Why does Krishna say it like that? The reason is this, that we are used to this world getting things, working and getting things, isn't it? But everything what we get in this world, we lose one day. That's the worst part of it. You worked hard and you earned a lot of money and you got a lot of things. But then you lose them also, finally. And there you are helpless, you can't hold on to that. Krishna is saying, this is the only one thing that you won't lose. That's the most important thing. Gacchanti amuda, never you will lose it again, Krishna is saying here. That is that state. And how do you remain there? What is the nature of that sarupam? That is that next verse. The nature of that thing, what you don't lose, is that next verse. Which one? Nadadbhasayate suryo, nashashango, nabhavaka, yadgatvana nivartande, tadhama paramam mama. That's that verse. So, in the last verse, Krishna said that gacchandi amuda padam avyayam. Avyayam it is. Avyayam means, you got it, you won't lose it. In this world, there is nothing that you can hold on to permanently, isn't it? Anything, whether president or prime minister or any position, chief executive or general manager or whatever position in this world, you can get it, you lose it one day. You can't hold on to that. But there is one thing Krishna says, you get it, you won't lose it any time. Gacchandi amuda padam avyayam. The nature of that padam which is avyayam is the next verse. Which one? Nathat bhasayade suryo, na shashanko, na bhavaga, yadgatvana nivartande, tadhama paramamma. That is the nature of that. So, for example, Krishna is saying here, our intelligence understands a few things. Our normal intelligence. What is that? Our normal intelligence is saying to us, you have to go to some place or you have to come to some place. Going, coming is a part of our psyche, isn't it? And it is based on that same principle. After death also we think we will be going somewhere. It's in everyone it is like that, isn't it? People say, I don't know where I'll be going. Some people say like that. From there you can understand that everybody thinks like this, that they'll be going somewhere. Then you may have heard some planets, some world from the Purana, Pitralogam or Swargalogam, or heavenly planets, or hellish planets, or Pitralogam, or Chandralogam, or so many logam mentioned in the Purana. Lot of those worlds is unknown to us. We don't know what sort of, where they are, how do they exist, all these things. We have little information about Swargalogam, that there's a lot of things to enjoy there. That much we have found out. We also know that there is a place called Naragalogam, the hellish planets, where if you go, life is pretty tough. That also we have heard. That's the average man's knowledge about these things, isn't it? So, in our imagination, that's all you can imagine today, sitting here. After death, I may either go there or go there, one of those places. But one thing is very sure, in your own mind you are thinking you'll be going somewhere, isn't it? So that means this coming going seems to be very strongly ingrained in us, that you'll be coming and going, isn't it? So that all depending on your imagination. Different people will imagine different things. Some people are always imagining about Goloka Vrindavan, some people enjoying about Vaikuntham. And somebody is saying, even if I can get to heavenly planets, it's not too bad. They say, we may not get to Golokam and all that, but at least if we can make it to heavenly planets and have... And some people do have the desire to go there. Because they are saying, before going to Golokam, at least let's find out what's going on in other places. So this tourism business, it's there even now in us. Spiritual tourism, as they call it now, isn't it? So this touristic nature is very much in everybody. When we die and when we go, we are not thinking that, can I stay somewhere around? No, we are thinking we'll be going somewhere else, find out wherever we're going there. So Krishna is saying here, this particular place Krishna is talking about, Krishna says, there is no sun, there is no moon, there is no stars in that place. There's no stars and nothing is self-illuminating. But there's something there which can illuminate all these things. That vastu is there. The vastu that illuminates everything is there. And only because of its presence that the sun, moon, the stars, everything is shining. That's how Krishna is explaining that state, that padam. So, there tad dhamma paramam mama, Krishna is saying here. Tad dhamma paramam mama, and that is my abode. That's how Krishna puts it. That's my abode, he says there. That's my abode. So, I mentioned this story also before that when Shankaracharya was on his journey, in one of the journeys, there was one very old Brahmana from Karnataka, about 80, 90 years old. Shivalli Brahmanas, they are still there, that group of Brahmanas, they are living there in the Mathur village, they live there. And they very learned Brahmanas used to live, as a community they used to be there. So in one instant when he was there, this old Brahmana came up to him and told him that all my life I have lived this austere life, strictly according to the Shastram injunctions, and I have served the fire. That means Brahminical culture demands that the fire should go on. And Shastram he has studied very well. But I have not reached that state yet. Realization hasn't come to me. He says to Acharya, to him. Acharya says to him and says to him that, what should I do now? This was his question. What should I do now? I have come and I am in this situation. I studied all the Shastram all my life, strictly followed all the Vedic injunctions. And I know very well that I haven't reached that state. Experience level, anubhuti has not happened to me. This was his reply to him. And at that time, first thing, the Acharya recited this verse. Which one? This Kathopanishad verse. The same verse what Krishna has quoted, that's the verse, first thing he has quoted to him. That is, he says here, that in the Kathopanishad, Nanatra Suryo Bhadi, Na Chandra Tharagam, Nema Vidhido Bhadi Kutoyam, Tameva Bhangam Anubhadi Sarvam, Tasya Bhasa Sarvam Ida Vibhadi. He mentioned this verse to that Brahmana. Brahmana is educated, well-educated person. So he says to him, Na tatra suryo bhadi, na chandra dharayam, nema vidhido bhadi kuto, yakutoyam, tameva bhandam, anubhadi sarvam, tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhadi. To know, is the Brahmana able to get it? To know that. That's why he said that. Mentioned this verse to the Brahmana. Brahmana was not able to get it. Brahmana was not able to get it. So, is explained to him that the nature of that state is there is no sun, there is no moon there.
And that, do you understand that? He says to him, that yasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhadi, by whose presence everything is illuminated. For example, we are seeing things because there is light there. That's why we see things, is it not? But in order to see, we need the light. But just because the light is there, we can't see. Why? Eye has to be there. So only in the presence of the light, this eye can function and I can see. But just because the eye is there, the light is there, doesn't mean that we can see. Why? We are not seeing in the eye, we are not seeing in the light, we are seeing actually in the mind is the experience. Experience of the object, what you see in the light with the eyes, is in the mind, isn't it? So, light is not enough, eye is not enough. You need the mind. Ajahn Swami says to him, yasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhadi. It is by whose presence even that mind is working, that is what you are. He says to him, to check whether he gets it or not. A person who has studied very well, Shastra, who has reflected on it very well, but still he hasn't got it. That is where a spiritual master's grace. This is Kripa. Krishna sends that person to him at that point when it's necessary, and through him it happens. It is that final touch from the spiritual master that makes the person realize the truth. That's what has happened here. That tasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhadi. He says to him, nadatra suryo bhadi, na chandra tararam, nema vidido bhadi, kudoyam tameva bhandam anubhadi sarvam, tasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhadi, tasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhadi. So, by whose presence all these things are happening? Krishna is saying, Upanishad is saying, Ajahn Swami says to the Brahmana, that by whose presence all these things are happening? To make him more and more inward. It's necessary. Although you may have studied all the books, still if the attention has not fallen on that soul, Shraddha, has not gone there, then you won't get it. And that happens due to the grace, Krishna's grace, that is. Krishna either speaks directly or through someone. Then when it gets clear, everything gets clear. It is at that time that Acharya Swami asked this famous words to him, that Eka Shloki it is called, it is on the Kim Jyoti. Where is the light? Tava bhanuma mahani me ratrao pradeepa adhikam syadevam revideeva revideeva darshana vidho kim jyoti akhyahini chakshustasya namirina syamayi kim dirdhiyo darshani kim tar ahamado bhavan paramadam jyotistadasam jyoti tadasmi prabho. This is how Acharya put it to him. Finally, he put it to him. After saying these Kathopanishad words, looking at him, Acharya felt that it hasn't hit him yet. So made it a little bit more simpler for him by saying it in this way. He says to him, that light which is shining during the day as the sun, and that light in the night as a lamp which shines there, and through that light of the sun and through that light of the in the night, you are seeing the objects. But he says to him, when you close your eyes, how do you see? He asked the Brahmana, when you close your eyes, you are still seeing, aren't you? That's interesting, isn't it? When you go into the dream state, you are seeing everything clearly and the eyes are closed. What does that indicate? You can see there. Normally we say you see the eyes to see. With the help of the eyes you are seeing things. But in the night, when you are in the dream state, so many things you are seeing. So where is the eyes then? That eye which opens up inside, there is another eye. Eye is all in the, when we say senses, senses. What does senses mean? Senses are all in the mind only. These are all just holes in the body. Just holes in the body. In a particular way that hole is created, that's all. Eyes one way, ears another way. But the power
that makes the eyes to see, the ears to hear, the nose to smell, the tongue to taste, the skin to touch. That power is the same power. They are not different. It is one energy that comes from the soul, which goes through the eyes in one way, goes through the ears in another way, goes through the tongue in another way. Through the tongue, when you are tasting, you experience that same power in another form. Through the eyes, you experience in a different way. Acharya asked this Brahmana this question, that that's all fine, everything is you understand. That the eyes you are seeing, the ears you are hearing, taste, tongue is tasting, skin is touching, nose is smelling, that's all one power, you agree. What about in the dream state, he asked him. He says to him, Syadevam Ravini Darshanavido Kim Jyotirakhya Hime. That in dream state also you are seeing, how do you see then? He asked. At that time, that which lights illuminates you in your mental perception. When you are in your mental, because in the vacant state, you are in the bodily state, isn't it? You are identifying with the body. When you go to the dream state, where are you? You are not in the body anymore, you are in the mind at that time. Is it not? When you go into the dream state, where are you experiencing everything? In the mind, not in the body. You left the body. That's why Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, when you take the three states, in the vacant states, you are in the body. In the dream state, your body is gone. Mind is there, I am there. In the deep sleep state, body goes, mind goes, I am there. That is one important principle always you have to remember. When you study Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, this one principle you have to always remember. In the vacant state, body is there, mind is there, I am there. In the dream state, body is gone, mind is there, I am there. In the deep sleep, body is gone, mind is gone, I am there. That much if you remember. So he says to him that even in the dream state, you become conscious, aware of things. How does that happen? He asks that question. It is then that he says that it is that supreme light that illumines the awareness. At that time also, that awareness that comes to you. Even in that state, that awareness that exists, that's you. Acharya Swamiji points it out to him. It is that awareness that you have experienced even in that state, even while in the mind. What you have experienced, what you have seen, that power. Krishna says here that that is you. That's how he brought him into this aware state, what Krishna is talking about. Kim jodirstava bhanumana hanime ratrau pradipadigam syadevam revidi revidiva darshanavidho kim jodiravyahime chakshustasya nimiladi samaye kim dirdhiyo darshani kim tatrahamano bhavan paravamam jodi tadasmi prabho. I am that jodi which is illuminating everything. The mind, the intelligence, the ego, the senses, and the world, everything is illuminated by that jyoti inside. That jyoti, asmi prabho, I am that jyoti. That is how he was told about it. So, so you can see here that in the night time also, when you are experiencing that dream state, that there is also soul is illuminating there, isn't it? Because even though, like in the vacant state, it works through the senses and we experience the world. In the dream state, when all the senses are shut down, body is shut down, again it takes us into another world and another experience there. So the same force that makes us experience in the vacant state is the same force which makes us experience in the dream state also. And that is why when the soul is operating in the dream state, it is called a taijasana. The word used is taijasana. In the Bhagavatam, you will see this in the 12th canto mention. Vishwan, taijasana, prajnan. Three names for the soul. Normally you don't give any name to the soul, do you? Because soul is consciousness. But even that is given a name. Why? Because in the three states, he operates in three different ways. In the Vishwan means one, in the vacant state, he reveals the world to us.
Therefore, he is called Vishwam. Vishwam.
Vishwam he is addressed as, because in the way you have to look at the names, only then you will get the spirit behind it. Why these names were given to him? He is called Vishwam because in the vacant state, what it does is, Alma, soul, what it does is, it makes you experience the world. Therefore, he is called Vishwam. In the dream state, because the world is shut down, he gives you a tejasa. A tejasa means a special potency to experience that world in the dream state. Therefore, he is called Tejasan. Tejasan is called. And when you go into deep sleep, when the world is shut down, the mind is shut down, he takes you to another state where he brings into contact with your prajna, alma, soul. Therefore, he is called prajna. Therefore, he is called prajna. Because he brings you to brings you into contact with the soul, he is addressed as prajna. Because he brings, reveals to you the experience of the dream state, therefore he is called Taijasan. And similarly, because he gives you experience of this gross creation, therefore he is called Vishwam. Vishwam, Taijasan, Prajnam. All three are mentioned in the 12th canto. If you want to see that there. So we have a short break.
चेदोदर्पणमर्जनं पवमः लवाग्निनिर्वावणं श्रेयकैलवचन्द्रियाविवरणं विद्यावधूजीवनम् आनन्दामुदिवर्धनं प्रतिपदं पूर्णाङ्गदास्वादनं सर्वात्मासुमनं वरं विजयते श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम् नाम्नामकारि बहुधा निज सर्वशक्ति तत्रापि दाने विदास्मरणेन काला एतादृशीलवान् भगवान् नमामि दुर्नैवीदृशमहानुरागाः श्रीजेना तरोरभि सहिष्णुना अमानिनामानदेन कीर्तनीय सदा हरि न धनं न जनं न सुन्दरीं कवितां वा जगदीशकामये मम जन्मनि जन्मनीश्वरे भवदात् भक्तिरहे युगित्वरे ैनङ्गदनुजगिङ्करं पतितामहं शमे भवामुदौ कृपयादवादवन्दजस्तिलोकैसदृशं विचिन्तया नयनङ्गलश्रुधारया पतनं गद्गदरुद्धया गिरा पुलकैर्निजितं कदा बभो तव माग्रहणे भविष्यति चक्षुषा प्रविशायितम् शून्यायुधं जगत् सर्वं गोविन्दं विरहे नमे आश्रय वा पादरतां विनष्टुमहम् अदर्शनं मर्महदां करोतु वा यथा तथा वा विदधा विलम्बनो मत्प्राणनाथा स्तुत एव नामकरा
सो न तद्भासयते सूर्यो न शशाङ्गो न भावग यद्गत्वा न निवर्तन्ते तद्धाम परमं मम इफ् यु अण्डर्स्टाण्ड् दट् वर्स् एस् ऐ मेन्शन् बिफोर् दट् वर्स् डू रिक्वायर् सम् डीपर् अण्डर्स्टाण्डिङ्ग् बिकास् कृष्ण सेयिङ्ग् दट् वाट् इस् द नेचर् आफ् दट् स्टेट् आफ् कान्शियस्नेस् वेन् वी कम् टु दट् वेन् वी रियलैस् द ट्रूथ् Self-realization means, what is that state? That's what is explained there, isn't it? As I mentioned that, in the verse, Ekashogi also said that Vishwan, Taijasan, Prajnan, in three states, Atma is addressed as in three states, isn't it? So, Swapnam, in the dream state, Atma is referred to as, or Jiva is referred to there, and that is known as Taijasan. This Alma and Jiva, that's always a very complex relationship, isn't it? As we mentioned many times, we will come to that. The next verse is that, all about that. There are different relationships between Alma and Jiva. So, you can see here that in that experience in the Jiva, in the dream state is Taijasan. Taijasan means that one who is capable of creating Tejasa. Tejasa means light. Atma's potency you have to recognize there. In the vacant state, he makes us experience this world outside through the gross body. We experience the world outside. In the dream state, he pulls back from the gross body and takes us into another world and experiences the dream there. In another world, we experience everything. In the deep sleep state, he takes us out of this gross body, out of the mind, and takes us in closer to the soul, which is Prajnam, which is on that, is addressed as Prajnam. So, where is the intelligence in all these things? That is what in that verse Acharya is saying there. That he uses the word, that's also interesting. In the verse, if you look, you'll see. Kim jodir tava bhavanumana harini ratro pradeva adhigam syadevam revidiva darshana vidho kim jodir avyahime chakshustasya nimililadi samaye kim dhirdiyo darshane kim tatrahamano bhavan paramaha jodi tadasmi prabho. That dhi, when it dhi means, generally dhi means intelligence. Dhi means intelligence. Generally the word dhi means intelligence. So in that deep sleep state or in the dream state also, there is a intelligence operating. When, see, this is the subtle side of that. When Alma gives us the power to perceive this world in the vacant state, Alma's power comes through us in the form of intelligence, isn't it? It's through the intelligence and the mind we perceive these innumerable name and form, Namarupam, as they call it. Namarupam is experienced through buddhi, intelligence. Now, when we go into the dream state also, the same intelligence operates in a different way in the dream state. That is why in the dream state you are able to perceive Namarupam again. Do you see the point? Namarupam means name and form. In the vacant state you have a set of Namarupam which is coming in through the body experience, and that is again behind that there is intelligence. And the same intelligence which operates in the dream state brings Namarupam in a different form to us. We see everything. For example, if I am dreaming this classroom in the dream state, I will see you all in the class. And I will see me also sitting and speaking, and I will be standing separately watching me speaking and you all listening that. And I will see that separately. So that means the same intelligence which brought us the world in the vacant state, in the dream state it brought back in a different way, brought everything in a different way. So, and the same intelligence in the deep sleep state, what it does is, it goes and dissolves somewhere. That is why you are not experiencing anything. Indeed, all what you have got at that time is some happiness which you are reporting back later on when you wake up. This is a beautiful experience to analyze this thing, these three. Vacant state, dream state and the deep sleep. So there what happens is you've gone and had a good deep sleep, isn't it? And when you woke up in the morning you say, I didn't know anything, what happened last night? It rained, I didn't know about the rain, that it rained. I didn't know that so many things happened in the night, I didn't know about it. So how, you didn't know anything, you are saying that you didn't know anything what has happened in the night. You are saying that in the morning. And you are also saying that my intelligence was not there to report about that. But then the question comes, you are also saying that I had this wonderful experience. I felt very rejuvenated in the morning after a deep sleep. You say, I felt very fresh. So where did that freshness come from? You feel completely rejuvenated in the morning. Sad vritti sad bhavam. Abhavam ahamithyayam. So that intelligence which is operating in the vacant state and which is again operating in a different way in the dream state, and in the deep sleep where it goes and dissolves, this is a very subtle thing, sushmam it is. Now this is where our difficulty is, because
Vedantam is saying to us, Vedic knowledge is always to make this intelligence finer and finer. To make it more finer and finer. Finer means sushma or more subtle. How to make the intelligence very subtle? That is the question. Not sharpness. Normally in material life we say, oh, he has got a very sharp intellect. We say like that, isn't it? His intelligence is very sharp. That doesn't help here. What we want is not sharpness. Sharpness is only in the vacant stage. What we require for the intelligence is sushmatva. Sushmatva means subtle. How to make the intelligence more subtle and pure. The more it becomes subtle, the more it becomes pure. The intelligence becomes more pure. So it is not sharpness, it is the subtleness of the intelligence is important in spiritual life. Sharpness doesn't help. Sharpness, what it does is, it, like the mind, it can analyze things in this world. That's all it can do. In a subtle level, it can't operate. Even though intelligence is very sharp, for example, what we say is, scientists, they've got very sharp intellect, who can understand how the material world operates and things like that, or solving mathematical equations or chemical formulas and things like that. Science and technology and all that, there you require sharpness of the intelligence. But that sharpness doesn't help in spiritual life. In spiritual life, what is required is sushmatva. Sushmatva means how to make that intelligence which is operating in the vacant state in one way, dream state in another way, which dissolves in the deep sleep, how to make it, we call it as Krishna buddhi, or Sushma buddhi, or Shuddha buddhi, or pure. It's a pure intelligence. But in order to understand Atma, the soul inside, and we require that intelligence which is very Sushma, very, very subtle and pure. And when the intelligence is very pure, you can see this, that there is that person, what Acharya is saying here. Because when he used the word Dhi means intelligence, Dhiya. He means intelligence. That intelligence, he's saying here, that he will know that the intelligence is also working under the guidance of another power, which is Atma. And Kim Tadasmi Prabho, he says, I am that. That is how he told this. So that Brahmana, remember I mentioned this, studying Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam and all, it is for this purpose, to make that intelligence more sushma, not sharp, more sushma, to become sushma. So when Acharya Swamiji mentioned this to him, Brahmana says, I am seeing that now, my attention has fallen on that. It took a while for him to get that attention there. So even for the intelligence, after first he has to have that sushmada, that subtlety in the intelligence, and then he realizes that he himself is the witness of that intelligence sharpness of the the subtlety of the intelligence. Tattvamasi bhavan param jyotihi, and he says, tadasmi prabho, I am that, what that light, what you are mentioning there. So after saying this, for a short period of time, that old Brahmana stood there. He couldn't say anything further after that. That kinjit kala samadhaya mano brahmani manasa. For a short period of time, he experienced that samadhi state, what he was talking about. And this is why he says here that avabhodham, what addressed in the Bhagavadam also, you will see when Krishna's father, Vasudeva, came to glorify Krishna, glorified Krishna after appearance. Isn't it in the Bhagavadam? You know, in the third chapter, there is a famous verses, 10 verses from Vasudeva and 10 verses from Devaki. And there also, Vasudeva says this, nobody else. Vasudeva, this is how Vasudeva glorified Krishna. Vasudeva didn't say, oh, you look so beautiful, this, that and the other. No. Straight away to the point, to the tattva. What he says to him, if you look into that, you will see in the third chapter of the 10th canto, the 18th verse, 10.3.18. Ya almano drishya guneshu sannidhi
vivasyati savyatirekato bhutaha vinanuvadam najadanmanishidam sammayat sammyak yadastyaktam upadadat puman ya almano drishya guneshu sannidhi vivasyati savyatirekato bhutaha vinanuvadam najadanmanishidam sammyak yadastyaktam upadadat puman. That is that word. Vasudeva's prayers to Krishna. A newly born baby, Vasudeva is saying this to the baby. What does that indicate? That shows that Vasudeva's sushmada of the intelligence, isn't it? How sushmam, subtle Vasudeva's intelligence is to see this and to speak in that way about Krishna. He says to him that if you are not there in us, in the form of awareness, how is Krishna present in all of us in the form of awareness, isn't it? Awareness is the symptom of Krishna's presence in us. If Krishna is not there, if we don't have the awareness in us, awareness is this, I am. I am experiencing this world. Why? Because of my existence, my awareness, existence in me. And this awareness, that is what in us is Krishna's presence. That is what we say, Krishna, Krishna, Antaryami and all, when we say, refers to that awareness inside. So Vasudeva is asking to Krishna, if you are not inside all of us in the form of that awareness, how we will experience this world? How can we experience this world? And how will I explain? And this awareness through which we are experiencing everything else in this world, that is the symptom of Krishna. That is Krishna's symptom. If you want, the only way you can prove Krishna exists in this world is through this way. Otherwise, everything else is just a statement. Shastram says, so what? But if somebody is asking for a concrete proof of Krishna's existence, the only way you can prove to anyone is that where is this awareness coming from? Nobody can answer except it is because this awareness is consciousness is Krishna. Krishna is that consciousness. It is due to that consciousness we are experiencing the world, we are experiencing the presence of so many people, we are experiencing our own existence because of the awareness. So important that is. That is why Vasudeva mentioned that in the prayers to Krishna. Alma ya almano drishya guneshu sannidhi. He says, ya almano drishya guneshu sannidhi. Your presence in us, sannidhyam. Your presence in us, drishya guneshu sannidhi. Vyavasyade savyadiregato abhudaha. That awareness is that happening because of your presence inside us. Vinanuvadam jatan madhyadan manishidam samyagyadastyattam upadadat puman. If you don't have your presence inside us, what do we have then? What have we got? Suppose I have no awareness of other things, then what's my existence? Only a bunch of material elements, isn't it? I have, because of Krishna's existence in the form of awareness, the mind is functioning. The senses are functioning. Intelligence is operating. Body is functioning. Pranam is functioning. So many activities inside, outside is all happening because of Krishna's presence inside. Vasudeva is saying to Krishna that if it is not, if you are not there, where will that awareness be? How will I have that awareness or prajna? He says to him. So, dead matter doesn't have awareness. For example, if I touch the mic won't know that I have touched the mic. But if I touch you, you will know that I have touched you. That is the proof of that awareness, isn't it? So that is why it's called anubhuti. Anubhuti it's called. So anubhuti is a nature of Chaitanya. Only living force has got anubhuti. Anubhuti cannot have for the dead matter. Dead matter cannot have anubhuti. So that is the only one thing what we are sure about in us, isn't it? In this body, if anybody asks what is sure thing is only this awareness, consciousness. Krishna is saying that this consciousness which leaves this body, goes into another body, that is eternal. Body is temporary, mind is temporary, intelligence is temporary, senses are temporary, all your experiences are temporary, world is temporary, awareness is permanent. That is the difference. Therefore, it is important to know that awareness alone has this experience, anubhuti. Anubhuti is only in awareness. If awareness is not there, experience is not there. You can't experience anything when there is no awareness, isn't it? So that is why various names in the Bhagavatam, when they use, they are all pointing out to this one thing, awareness, bodham, jnakti, prajna. So many names Krishna has used in so many different places. Last words he used the word dhamam. That also means the same thing. So, you can see there that shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham. Normally, through these five things, five knowledge, senses of knowledge, it is through them that we experience other objects. But I am existing or not, I can't verify that through these five things, can you? I am existing or not, because I am not actually this body referring to. I'm talking about my own existence's awareness, which cannot be verified through the senses. Which cannot be verified through the senses. Similarly, if I want to know about your existence, I need the senses to see that whether you exist or not. But therefore, touch sense or anything, whatever it may be, Krishna mentions here that, so you see these examples they give sometimes when people get amputated, their legs broken or hands broken in the war, for example, soldiers, when they lose their young age, they lost their limbs, legs or arms, and they were amputated. And they went back to sleep. And in the sleep, the telephone bell rang. They got up and walked to pick up the telephone. Why is that? And many people have tripped and fallen. It takes a while to register that in the consciousness, that part of the body has gone. It takes a while for that. That's why it's mentioned like that. So, but body, even if you lose a part of it, it takes a while to register. But have you noticed that this awareness at no time gets reduced? In the boyhood, childhood, boyhood, youthhood, old age, all time, the awareness of my existence never diminishes. It always remains steady. It always remains steady. And you cannot even forget it about yourself, isn't it? Suppose I don't exist. If I want to forget about my own existence, it's impossible. Impossible to forget it. So that is why you cannot forget it, this experience. Even when you are in the total darkness, your own existence, you don't have any doubt about it. So that is why you will see Devaki Devi's prayers. If you look into the same chapter, she is addressing Krishna exactly like Vasudeva has done. Devaki is saying to Krishna, Sata matram nirvishesham niriham. This is the words Devaki has used. Sata matram, that sata, that awareness is you. Both Vasudeva and Devaki confirms this in the prayers. They didn't go saying to Krishna, you look so beautiful and this and that and the other. They were not the important. Whole of Vasudeva's prayers, which you have discussed before, whole of Vasudeva's prayers, if you read, Father is addressing the Son in this way. That there is no discussion about the form or the name or any other attributes or qualities of Krishna. Nothing is spoken. All what is spoken is about who is Krishna. Saying to us, they are saying to Krishna, you are that Atmano Drishya Guneshu Sannidhi Vivasadesam Yadrekado Buddha. That words that we have discussed before. And Devaki Devi also said the same thing. She says, Sata Matram Nirvishesham Niriham. That is Krishna. Sata Matram Nirvishesham Niriham. Addressing Krishna in that way. So, so Sata Matram Nirvishesham. This Sata Matram, Sata, that is a word they use. Sata Matram, that is a anubhuti. It is not pratiti. Pratiti means perception. Anubhuti means experience. Normally we get mixed up with both. When we write our jobs and applications and all that, what do we say? I had so much experience in this field and that field and all kinds of experience. That experience has no much meaning. That's actually, it is perception in this. It's not experience. Experience is only for chetana, for consciousness. That's where that clear separation is necessary. Otherwise, it will all get mixed up. Experience is only for consciousness. Everything else is perception it is in the world. What you experience with your senses is all perception. Everything is perception. So, this anubhuti, satamatram nirvishesham, what Devaki Devi is saying there, nirvishesham, that is anubhuti. Satamatram nirvishesham, that means Devaki Devi is experiencing that inside, Krishna's presence in that way. And it is a, one of the feet of Brahma. Brahma's feet, that is kala. It is called as kala. And it will manifest in a person. There is three kala for Brahma. What are they? Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat, Chit, Ananda. It is that Sat kala, what Devaki Devi is talking about here. Satamatram, Sat. Satamatram nirvishesham niriham. Why did Devaki say that? Why did she say Satamatram nirvishesham niriham? Reason is, the other two kala, Chitta and Anandam, if you do not give attention to this kala called Sat, Chitta and Anandam will not be experienced. You see, when normally we say about the soul, three things, isn't it? So eternal, blissful, full of knowledge. Satta, Chitta, Anandam. We say like that, isn't it? So, if your attention has not fallen, or if you have not experienced this Sat potency, Sat, Chitta and Anandam will never be experienced. It's not possible. This is the way it works. First of all, these three potencies exist in the soul. Satta, Chitta, Anandam. Eternal, blissful, full of knowledge. Isn't it? Chitta is the knowledge, Anandam is the bliss, Sat is the eternity. Eternity. Till you experience the Sat potency of the soul, the Chit potency and Anandam potency, or blissful potency and the knowledge potency, will not manifest in a person. This is the rule. This is the reason why Devaki Devi said there, Satamatram nirvishesham niriham. Let that Satamatram, you are the Sat, because if you are experiencing Sat, you can say that nirvishesham niriham. The Chit potency and the Ananda potency is also present there in that thing. Because that potency, everyone has it right now. We have it already. That Sat potency's nature is that is what makes us think that we don't die. We feel very confident. Even if I tell you all the death, what is happening in the world, still you think you won't die. Where is this coming from? It's an interesting question, isn't it? In spite of the fact that people are dying all the time, and we know that death is going to happen, we know in our brain that death is going to come, but somebody is telling me inside, there is no such thing called a death. And that is the truth also. There is no such thing called a death. Death is for the body. For me, there is no death. Person, there is no death. So this awareness or potency of this experience, Krishna is saying here, you may agree with this thing, that yes, I understand that Sat potency, I can understand it, because somebody is telling me from inside there is no such thing called death. And because till you experience death directly, and that too, when you study the Shastram is telling us that death is for the body. And all these examples in the Bhagavadam, and including Parikshit Maharaj's life, is indicating to us that death is only for the body, not for me. More and more that conviction comes to us that there is no such thing called death, isn't it? So this, you may say that, yes, I can understand that, but the other two things, Chitta and Anandam, I am not experiencing. I am not experiencing at the moment. I understand that I exist, that experience is there. But what is the use when I don't get the other two? So there it says here that everyone says that when you realize the self, naturally, automatically the other two, chit potency and ananda potency, both of them will come, shanti will come, satisfaction will come, and perfection will come at that stage. But they are not there. What is the point in telling I exist, when I don't have the other two? This question will naturally come, isn't it? So, it's like this. They gave this example. There's a lot of pots lying there. They look like brass pots. Brass pots. So, one young man, his parents died. And he was short of money. So, he had a lot of pots lying in the kitchen and in his storeroom. Old pots, very old pots. He looked at them, looked like brass pots to him. So, he took all the pots in a sack, packed them all, took it to the shop and asked the shop owner, you can have all these pots, give me some money for that. He said, because after all, brass pots, how much money you're going to get it? So he hands over all the pots to them. But the shop owner looked at them, he immediately understood they were not actually brass pots. What has happened is, pots made of gold also, if you don't polish them and keep them shiny, in due course of time, they will look like brass. They look like brass. So he polished one of the pots and looked at it, and it was all gold. So this young man, who was cursing his parents before for not giving enough money for him to live in this world, he was saying that you old people have left me with these pots and gone. When he realized that all the pots were gold and there was so much money involved in that, when he comes home, he puts up the photo of his father and mother and starts worshipping them for what they have done. So it is the same stage with us also. In this till, so he started worshipping him. So that is why that we don't know the value of the Atma who is present inside at the moment. We are treating it like the brass pot inside. We're thinking, oh, there's something, somebody there inside. What does it matter? What matters now is this body. Body should live nicely and everything should be cared for the body. Atma, well, if it happens, it happens. If not, what does it matter? Why? Because our approach is like the brass pot. You are thinking that it's like the brass pot, not knowing that this brass pot is not actually made of brass, it's made of gold. And that is why Satta, Chitta, Anandam is all there in that pot. So, and that only thing is, our Shraddha is not there. That is the problem. Shraddha is in the world and so many other things, in the body and in the other various things in this world, in the body as well as in the world. So Krishna is saying here that once you start putting your Shraddha attention in there, then things will, it will start seeing the golden pot. For Jnanam, there is no sadhana. Sadhana is not important for Jnanam. This is very important. For knowledge, spiritual knowledge, sadhana is not important. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Shraddha is important. Shraddha is more important, not sadhana. For bhakti, sadhana is important. For jnanam, shraddha is important. That is why Krishna says, Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. Shraddhavan, one who has got shraddha, he will get jnanam. Not one who is doing a lot of sadhana. Lot of sadhana he may do, he may or may not get jnana. That is not guaranteed. He may not get jnana if he is absorbed in the sadhana. We think that sadhana is everything. Most of the people have this misunderstanding also. That, oh, I'm doing so much sadhana, I've done so much sadhana, I'm going to do. Sadhana is only one aspect of spiritual life. Sadhana, Krishna is saying here, Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. He didn't say that sadhana labhade jnanam, isn't it? He mentions very clearly, Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. So, that is the only reason that this satavatram nirvishesham nariham, Devaki Devi is saying, if our Shraddha becomes serious, if we become serious about the soul and the inquiry becomes very serious, it will have its result. It will have its results. So, one of the main problems in Vedantam is this, that we intellectualize the Vedantam too much. Many people intellectualize the Vedantam. Intellectualize means They are trying to understand Vedantam through their intelligence. Although their intelligence is not pure, nor it is sushma. They are thinking that because they have this intelligence in them, and they are used to this, using intelligence for everything. In Vedantam also, we make the same mistake. Through intelligence, we are trying to understand again with the mind and intelligence. That won't work. That simply won't work. Because spiritual realization and Krishna consciousness is on a different plane altogether. Completely different it is. There what is required is not intelligence of this material world. That intelligence, that intellect. So this, it is, we have made it as a business of the intelligence. Buddhi Vyavara, it is called. So, whereas Upanishad says, it is not Buddhi Vyavaram, it is Hridaya Vidya. It is the Hridaya Vidya. Shruti says that, Hridaya Vidya. That is why in the Bhagavadam, when they opened verses itself, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adigavaye Mukhyandiyat Suraya, says there, isn't it? Tene Brahma Hridaya. Even Brahma did not capture the message through intelligence. Brahma captured it through the heart, isn't it? When Krishna transmitted the message to Brahma, Srimad Bhagavatam, how did he get it? Did he get it through intelligence or did he get it through the heart? He got it through the heart. Bhagavatam says very clearly, isn't it? Tene Brahma Hridaya Adigavaye Mukhyandiyat Suraya. Bhagavatam says this. So you can understand from that, intelligence is not of much use in the process of receiving spiritual knowledge. Intelligence can't help. And unfortunately, because this message has gone missing, many people try to use the intelligence and they don't get anywhere. They will keep on doubting, asking questions and keep on rolling over the same thing again and again. Sometimes they are under the effect of the mind, sometimes the effect of the intelligence, or sometimes according to your vasanas, they will look at things. But in order to free yourself from that, that is the very reason why in the first verse itself, it was spoken like that. Tene Brahma Hridaya. Brahma, Krishna entered into Brahma's heart, not to the intelligence. Isn't it? So only through heart basis, this is in a completely different plane this is. And that is why Mukhyandiyat Suraya, even very learned people, sometimes they are in illusion. They can't get it, this message of Bhagavatam, or the knowledge of the self does not go to them. Why? Mukhyandi yet suraya. They are mukhyandi because that illusion has not gone away from them. In other words, their intelligence has not become sushma, subtle enough. Unless our intelligence becomes very subtle. See, when we say intelligence, mind and all that, it's only one force that comes from the soul, chitshakti, isn't it? When, depending on which way it works, we call it mind, we call it intelligence, we call it ego, we call it something else. What a mind. All these are different things. But power is the same. Just like one power operates through different senses. When it operates through the eye, you see. When it operates through the tongue, you taste. When it operates through the ears, you hear. But the power is the same. Like the electricity comes and goes through the lights in one way, in the fridge operates in another way, in the computer operates in different way, in the CD player it operates in different way. Various ways it's operating. Upadhi is different. But the force that's coming through all of them is one and the same. Same electricity. Similarly, in us also, there's only one force, the chitshakti, which is operating. It operates through the senses and you experience the world in different ways. Five ways we are experiencing this world, in five different ways. Shabdam, Sparsham, Rupam, Rasam, Gandham. Some living entities experience the world in three ways because they don't have five senses. So Upadhi has changed. Upadhi has changed, but the force that's operating in that species also is the same that's operating in us. It's not different. So that's what it says here. Tene Brahma Hridaya. Hridaya means that neither or intellectual, it is neither intellectual nor emotional. That's the important point. Because intellectual thing is the business of the intellectualization is the activity of the intelligence. And emotions is the activity of the mind. It is neither of them. It is neither the mental nor the intellectual. Neither the mental nor the intellectual. Because mind is sentimental, isn't it? sentimental. So, and the other one, intelligence is discriminative. It discriminates things. That's the business. Intelligence does this, isn't it? So that is the business of the intelligence. Neither of them, neither the mental nor the intellectual, a third one, that is what Krishna is talking about here, this hrit, hrit, hridaya, what he's talked about. Tene brahma hridaya adhigavaya muhyandaya suraya. So whenever Krishna is talking about hrit or hridayam, that is another plane completely different from the mental platform or the intellectual platform. Mental platform or intellectual platform. So, excluding this intellectual plane and the mental plane, there is another plane in all of us, that is the plane of the hridayam, the heart. Not the heart which circulates the blood. Again, there is another system completely different from that. Krishna calls it as hrit. Actually, it is from this word hrit, the English word heart has come. Heart has come from the Sanskrit word hrit. That hrit is the one, but how it happened, we don't know. Hrit, when Krishna is referring to, is on the right side. Heart, in the science term, terminology, it's on the left side. There itself, it just lost it. They lost it there itself. When Krishna says hrit, it is referring on the right hand side. When in English, when we say heart, it's on the heart, it's on the right, left hand side. But this word heart has come from this word hrit. Anybody, if you ask any linguist, he will tell you where this word has come from. So, but only thing is, it changed the position from here to here when the language changed. That's all. So this one heart, which is the one in the what is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in many places, sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto. Krishna says there, isn't it? That hridi is not this heart, this is here. Hridi sannivishto. Matta, smriti, jnanam, apohanam cha. All that is happening here in this place, isn't it? There's also other places in the Bhagavadam as well as in the Bhagavad Gita where hridi is referred to. Hridi is referred to. So, that thing, so when this power wakes up inside, the chit shakti inside, it is also referred to as chit vilasam. There is so many names in the Shastram to explain this thing, depending on the situation. So, it is neither through the intelligence, nor through the emotions, you realize this truth, Brahman, Brahman realization. Then how is it realized? It is called chit vilasam. You know the word used, chidvilasam. Why it is called chidvilasam? Reason, there is a reason behind it. Vilasam means that Krishna is inside the heart, isn't it? Andaryami. Chit Shakti comes from him. From Krishna comes Chit Shakti, which is our chit potency. When Krishna reveals to us this knowledge, it comes like that only. It only comes from Krishna, by Krishna reveals the knowledge to us. Then it is called a vilasam. It is the vilasam of the chit shakti. That's why it's called a chid vilasam. Chid vilasam it's called. It is not on the mental plane. It's not on the intellectual plane. Totally different chit shakti operates. Chit shakti operates, and the operation activities of that chit shakti is called a chid vilasam. It's called chidvilasam. So, and if, when that chit shakti starts manifesting in that way, then you will know that your attention started falling on that aham, aham asmi, awareness. You started taking it seriously. Now, right at this moment, you are on an intellectual level taking notice of that aham. That aham, awareness, on an intellectual level, you are taking notice of it. But when it leaves the intellectual level, on an experience level, when it happens, that is when that attention falls on. That is why we say that your attention, Shraddha, what Krishna calls it as, Shraddha, that is what that is. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. That means your attention is on the chit shakti, not through the mind, not through the intelligence, but through the way that in your experience level it started happening. And that is the one which is present in all of us, which is Jyotisham Abhita Jyoti. You remember this verse? When was that? In the 13th chapter. If you look, you will see there. We studied one verse there. Jyotisham Abhidha Jyoti, 13th chapter. Beginning, Jyotisham Abhidha Jyoti. 18? Remember that verse? We spoke about that at that time. Jyotisham Abhidha Jyoti. Yeah. Yeah. Jyotisham Abhidha Jyoti Tamasaparam Uchyade Jnanam Jnayam Jnanagamyam Hrithi Sarvasya Vishthidam. So it's called Jyoti there. Jyoti. That's the word used. Jyoti. Again, it's the same thing. So everywhere words may be different, but you shouldn't get worried about that. Only thing to know is that it is that presence of the Jyoti inside, which is tamasaparamuchyade. That means you have transcended the darkness from there. And you know that jnanam jnayam jnanagamyam. Jnanam jnayam jnanagamyam. It is knowledge. Its swarupam is knowledge. And that is one has to be known. And that is only thing what has to be attained finally. Jnanam, Jnayam, Jnanagamyam. And that is situated in the Hrith, heart. Hrithi Sarvasya Vishthitam. So you can see that whenever we read Bhagavad Gita, if you keep all these things in mind, it will all make some sense. Whereas if you keep on reading Bhagavad Gita through the mind and intelligence all the time, it will remain an unknown entity, what Krishna is talking about. If not, you'll always think that, oh, Krishna is saying something. I can't understand what he's saying. Whole thing remains unknown to us. And that is why these things, when you come to this chapter particularly, Krishna is stressing this point again and again. Come out of the platform of the mind. Come out of the platform of intelligence. Come to the platform of the soul. We may not reach that platform straight away, but unless we endeavor, how will it happen? How it's going to happen? If you count, whole material life is centered around mind and intelligence, isn't it? Mind and intelligence is all what we know today. Scientists also same thing, mind and intelligence. That's what they consider as the final. The highest thing they will accept is intelligence. After intelligence, they can't go any more further. Whereas spiritual life begins when you finish with intelligence. When the spiritual life, it begins after intelligence, after the intelligence. So that is why he mentions like this, that in Srimad Bhagavatam, in many places, the same thing, Jyoti, is referred to as Deepam, light. Deepam, Deepavali is coming from that, Deepam. So, there the word used is Deepam. Devani Devi calls it as Deepam in the prayers. Satamatram Nurvishesham Niriham Satvam Sakshat Vishnu Adhyalma Deepam. Adhyalma Deepam. So, she used the word Deepam, where here Krishna used the word Jyoti, all one and the same thing. Jyoti, Alma, Divam, Brahmam, Prajna, Nyapti, whatever you want to call it, Vastu is the same. That's all. Vastu is the same. So, this is the way you have to go into Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, you will see here that Divam means there's only one thing, by whose presence everything else you can see. But to see Divam, you don't need another Divam. This Divam, what Krishna is referred to, here, in Diwali, when we say Deepavali, normally we refer to the clay pots with some oil in it and a wick in that, we say, oh, that's Deepam, we say. Or if you in the modern 21st century, we have candles, that's a Deepam there, we will say. But in spiritual life, not this, not that. This Deepam, what Krishna is talking about, that Jyotisa inside, who is illuminating everything. Because of the presence of that Jyoti inside, everything we perceive, we experience in this world, isn't it? So that is what Krishna is, and that is present in, that Deepam is present in us, all of us, in the form of awareness. I exist, that awareness. So little by little, our attention has to fall onto that awareness, and that is the sadhana. That is the sadhana. So, even while chanting the holy name, you have to ask the question, who is chanting? If you ask the question, who is chanting? Isn't it? So that power which is inside, which is actually inducing us to chant, which is operating our intelligence, that thing is called Savitri Devata. If you remember, when you chant the Gayatri, Savitri Mandala Madhyavarti, Krishna is addressed like that in the Bhagavatam also. Remember, when Bharata Maharshi means Bharata Yogeshwar, Jada Bharata. If you read the fifth canto, you will see, when he went to perform his penances on the banks of the river, Gandaki River, in Nepal, where he was performing his penances, he was executing his daily activities, spiritual activities. There you will see, he mentions there, he was addressing Krishna, who is present as Savitri Mandala Madhyavarti. That's the word used there. Savitri Mandala Madhyavarti. The word, what it refers to is that one who is present in sun and who is illuminating the sun. That is how he is seeing Krishna in the sun. We look at the sun, we don't see any Krishna there. All we are seeing is hydrogen and helium and all burning there. And we say to everybody that it will run out very soon. And then we'll be in serious trouble. This is that depth of ajnanam inside, avidya, ignorance. When it gets so thick, it will come out like this. We will vomit out all these kind of statements. Krishna is present in the sun. Shastram is saying, rishis are saying to us. And that Krishna's presence there is addressed as Savitri Mandala Madhyavarti, as he is referred to. And we are saying something different. Because he is addressed as Savitri Devata. While chanting Gayatri also you will see this. Savitri Devata. She is addressed as Savitri Devata. So, Krishna, who is present in the sun and makes the sun to give this light, illuminates the sun. That Krishna, who is present inside me, has to illuminate my intelligence. It's all illumination only, isn't it? What is self-realization means? Illumination. You are illuminated. Not in the way sun is illuminating, but in a different way, but it is also illumination. Sometimes we say spiritually enlightened person. Why do we say like that? Because Krishna, who is present inside us, he illuminates our intelligence, which means he gives that the subtlety for our intelligence to capture this message properly. That's what it does. Sushma buddhi, or prakasham, or the purification of our intelligence. Not sharpness, again. Sushmatva, that subtlety. So, and that is present inside us in the form of awareness. Yakti, or then experience. If you talk about it, you won't get it, because even if you get it, even if you got it, when you start giving your attention to it, what will happen is these three modes of nature will come. Sattvagunam, Rajogunam and Tamogunam will come. And the mind which has got these three modes of nature, it will take us away. That is the reason why even if you want to give attention to the soul, you are not able to give it because of this. These three modes of material nature, it will block. Mind will come with the three modes of nature. It will lift you and take you away somewhere else. This is the power of the mind. So, that is the reason, because of this reason only, how devotees pray to Krishna. You remember how Muchukunda prayed to Krishna? If you look into that 51st chapter, Muchukunda's prayers, if you look, he says to Krishna, my only problem is, he says, Tasma 10, 51, 57. Tasmad dusrajya shisha isha sarvadu rajastama sattva guna anubandhanam. He says, when I am under the three modes of material nature, I will not get you. It is not possible to realize the truth. He is saying this. Who? Muchukunda is saying this. Tasmad visrajya shisha isha sarvadu rajastama sattva guna anubandhanam. Rajogunam, tamogunam, sattvagunam. When all these three modes of material nature is present in me, how will I get it? Because he understood the problem. Remember, Muchunda wanted to realize the truth. He asked the demigods to help. Demigod says, no, we can't do anything about it. That's not it, because they are also not out of the modes of nature. They are also in the goodness, isn't it? Unless one has come out of the three modes of nature, you will never be able to experience this. So demigods told him that we can't do anything about it. Then Muchunda says to them, all right, at least give me this blessing so that I can go into deep sleep. That's all he wanted. Why? The reason is, deep sleep is the most safer bed than the other two. Unlike in the waking state and the dream state, where the mind and the body is operating, there is a possibility of creating vasanas inside. In deep sleep, there is no possibility of creating any new fresh vasanas, isn't it? At least you are protected from that. That is the reason why he asked for deep sleep. But people always think, oh, why does he ask for deep sleep from the demigods? Sometimes people find it very difficult to understand that, isn't it? But when you understand the reason behind it, then it makes sense. The reason is this, that in deep sleep state alone, you don't create fresh vasanas. Whereas in the wakened state, and even in the dream state, there is possibility of vasanas building up inside. Whereas deep sleep is totally vasana free. Totally vasana free. Therefore he said, okay, you can't give me that state of liberation, fine, because you are not out of it, because you also have the same problem of satuguna. But at least for me, give me this one blessing that I can go and sleep in deep sleep state. Let me stay in that deep sleep state. This is the reason behind it. So after that he says to them, so how do you know that this is the reason? Muchunda was a great yogi. You have to know, he is not an ordinary person. A great personality, a great yogi as well. And he has tried all these things before. You won't see this in this chapter. In the ninth canto you will see when Muchunda's birth was spoken. Muchunda was born as the son of Manthadhav, isn't it? Manthadhav's son was Muchunda. This Muchunda, in his early years of life, was a great yogi. He taken into yoga process very much. And he has tried all that. So he knows a lot about it. He's not an illiterate person. He knows this yoga system very well. And he says there that the best option for me now, when the demigod said that I can't offer me liberation, is till I get liberation, the best state to be is in the deep sleep state. We also like deep sleep, but not for any other reason. Our headaches, our happiness is all in the deep sleep, isn't it? Our happiness in it. Whether we get liberation or not, that's not bothering. But at least in deep sleep state, we enjoy that for this reason only. That because you have stopped activities in deep sleep. Karma vasana has come to a dead stop. At least fresh vasana you are not creating anymore. So he says to them, even if I don't get self-realized, it doesn't matter. At least let me don't go in the wrong way. Because karma means what? Further bondage. Further action, further bondage, further results, further vasanas, further body. Like this he'll go on and on and on and on. At least I want to stop it now, he said. So demigods helped him for that. To stop the continuity of that birth. So he chose that, and so when he asked them that, they said to him that we can't give you that liberation what you are talking about, and that only Krishna can offer. Nobody else can offer. And then he says to them, if you can't offer that to us, then there's no point in talking to you, he said. He says to them like that, openly. He says there, give me a good sleep. That's all what you can offer. That's enough, he says. And because if I wake up, I'll be in trouble again. I'll get into action. When I get into action, karma will start. And when the karma starts, vasanas will come. When the vasanas come, fresh body again. I don't want that to happen again. I'll go and sleep somewhere. In the ninth canto, you will see, Muchunda says how a powerful yogi he was. If you look in the ninth canto, you will see about yoga practices of Muchunda. So when Krishna is praying to Krishna like this in the ninth canto, you will see this in the sixth chapter. About the birth of Muchunda. Shasha bindur duhitari bindu madhya madha amrava purugulsam ambarisham mujubundam chayoginam It is from that Bhagavatam commentators have got this understanding about Muchukunda. Specifically, Shuka Brahmarshi mentions there, Purugulsam Ambarisham Muchukundam Cha Yoginam. In other words, Muchukunda himself, Purugulsa's son is Ambarish. Ambarish's son is Muchukundam Cha Yoginam. Tesham Sasara Panchasan Saubharim Vavrire Patim. That Muchukunda, who was a yogi, it is mentioned like that. And what all did he do? Then he talks about Saubhari's life there. So from that word, Muchukundam cha yoginam, they knew Muchukunda's background, what kind of person he was. That is why he mentions there in that way. So, so he has practiced yoga system before. And he has got quite a bit of knowledge about these things. He was not ignorant about it. But he is still not getting it. This realization of the self is not getting it. Somewhere, just like he has written big article, but there is a spelling mistake somewhere. He knows that something is missing. That is how he found out that. So he is not getting that link, what he was looking for. It is at that time he says to Krishna that Rajas Tamas Sattva Gunayana Bandhanam. He says to him, as soon as my mind comes out, Sattvagunam Rajagunam comes, Tamagunam comes, and it pulls me out. And therefore give me that benediction by which this will not happen. Which one? That Rajagunam, Sattvagunam, Tamagunam will not pull me back again, and I will have that pure experience of the self consciousness. And otherwise, if you get caught up in the mental platform, sensual platform, or intellectual platform, then you are lost. You won't get there. These three platforms, mental platform, sensual platform, mental platform, intellectual platform, any one of them can take you away from realizing the truth. So, as those who are serious about spiritual life, they have to be careful not to get trapped into any of the three. Any of the three. That is the alertness in a person, in spiritual life. And that is why, that thing what Krishna says, Jyotisham Abhidat Jyoti, that verse. Jyotisham Abhidat Jyoti, Tamasam Param Uchyate, Jnanam, Jnayam, Jnanagamyam, Kriti Sarvasya Tishtidam. That is only the platform in which you can realize the self. Only in that platform you will realize the self. Not through the mind, not through the intelligence, not through the senses. That's why that verse, when we discussed, mentioned that, such an important verse. Like here, we mentioning here, Nadat Bhasayade Suryo Na Shashango Na Pavaga Yad Gatvana Nivartande Taddhava Paramam Mama. The same thing in the 13th chapter, Krishna is saying in another way. Jyotisham Abhidat Jyoti Tamasa Paramuchyate Jnanam Eyam Jnanagamyam Kriti Sarvasya Vishtidam Kriti Sarvasya Vishtidam. So that is what that is. That's that. These two verses you should connect to each other, and you should experience that within, to the extent possible, in our not to use the mind, not to use the intelligence, everything on an experience level. Only then Bhagavad Gita will make sense. Otherwise it will remain as another unknown textbook. We'll keep reading with the mind and intelligence. It will never get in our realizations. So we'll stop there today. We'll continue next Saturday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.